All right, for those of you on the phone, could you identify yourself, please?
Here, this is Alyssa Manduso, the Air Force Attorney.
Tina Echols with EDNC, in the Urban Student Center.
Beth Hickey from EDNC, in the Urban Student Center.
Okay, thank you. All right, the meeting of the January 26, 2017, meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private School Second Education is called to order at 10:01. Good morning. The audio recording of the 10/26/2017 meeting has been posted on website and provided to the board members for review with board material. Ms. Stanfield, have you confirmed the minutes are posted and are legible?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any questions?
No, Madam Chairman.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the audio recording?
So moved.
Second.
We have a... We have a motion in a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Thank you. We are very pleased and honored to have two new members to our board. Those of you who would like to visit us often know that we've had some changes. And so we are happy to welcome back a previous member and welcome a new member. So if you'd each just give a little quick little information about yourself, that would be awesome.
Sure. Hello, my name is Jim Dugan. I'm retired right now, but I worked for 38 years for DeVry. And at the end, I was a regional vice president, but I was a campus president here for many, many years in the Phoenix. And so I've worked in the state of Arizona for all these years, and I'm very pleased to be back. I have been appointed to this board before by different governors, so I've got many years of service on the board. I've been absent for 3 or 4 years now because I was traveling so much at the end that I couldn't really attend very many meetings, but I'm glad to be back. Thank you very much.
My name is Dr. Jennifer Leck. I'm the Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs, the University's Registrar for Grand Canyon University. I've worked there for over 13 years, and I've been in higher education post-secondary for about 17 years.
Great.
And by the way, my appointment is not in the industry now, it's at large. So I'm one of the two members at large.
So now that he's retired, he's a member of the public?
Yes, I am.
Great. Now if we could, since you stepped out, we'll start with you, and we'll introduce everyone around the table for the recording.
Frankie Schim Eckberg, Attorney General, Attorney for the Board.
Terry Stanfield, Director.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Paul Mitten, board member.
Craig Jacob, board member.
Chris Lennon, chair.
Glenn Tharp, board member.
Jim Dugan, board member.
Keith Blanchard, deputy director.
Rachel Pierce, administrative assistant.
Welcome, everybody. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431-03A3, in case you took notes. On any matter on the agenda, the board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Stanfield, are there any requests or changes to the agenda?
No, ma'am.
The first order is the student tuition recovery fund claim filed by former IGT Technical Institute students.
Madam Chair, member of the State Board, I've attached 7 strike claims that were submitted by different students from ITT Tech closure, which took place on September 8, 2016. There is no surety bond, so all the funds will be taken out of the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. I've given you an express spreadsheet listing the claim amounts, the refund amounts based on what was submitted by the students. You'll notice that there isn't any, a lot of the documentation is missing regarding to transcripts or account cards, so we just had to produce this information based on what students were able to do this. If you have any questions, I don't think anybody's on the phone from the students. I don't think anybody's here.
Are any of the students with strap claims on the line?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, so the only... discussion really is that, in my opinion, was that one of the students had withdrawn prior to the school closure, and therefore that is one claim that was submitted that will not be honored because we can't legally do so. Do any other members have any questions about any of the materials that were submitted?
No, and with the exception of that one student, I would say I would make a motion that we approve six of the seven.
Great. Okay. We have a motion and a second.
Yes, I second.
All those in favor? You want to say? Do you say the actual name or the initial?
Initial.
Okay. RB, $630. ECM, zero. BK, 420. AL, 135. PF, $5,980.50. MS, $33,374.25. And VZ, $10,593. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Madam Chair, can you second the motion?
I did.
Thank you.
All right, before we go to the next item on the agenda, the board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also go into executive session on items 5 and 6 to discuss or consider records exempt by law for public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony, which is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state and federal law pursuant to ARS 38431-03-82. The first item under section 5, status update, is the Art Institute of State.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your October board meeting, the board proposed a consent agreement for non-disciplinary probation requiring a $2,047,700 bond and reporting requirements. The consent agreement has been signed and the surety bond was received. Eric Daniels was also required to appear before the board on a quarterly basis. Ms. Ethel has provided to you an update. In addition, we have been provided confidential information from Mark McEachin, the president of the EDMC.
So, Terry?
Yes.
This is Dina. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to hang up and we're going to dial into the other number now.
Okay. And it has been requested that the board go into our executive session to discuss this letter.
We have make a motion to go to executive session?
Yes, I'll make a motion that we go into executive session.
Second.
Yeah, motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passed. If all of you would please take all of your belongings, cell phones, briefcases, et cetera, and exit, move the conversation.
For those of you who are on the phone, I'm going to hang up. I will redial back in when the executive session is over. So if you wish, as soon as we hang up, you can dial back in and you'll hear music and you can come back on. Thank you.
DHDNKE, I'm Chief Compliance Officer and Senior Vice President of Accreditation and Licensing for EDMC. I was present at the October meeting.
I'm Gina Eccles. I'm the Vice President of Student Finance and Compliance for EDMC.
Madam Chair, do you have the executive session?
Oh, this one?
For everyone's information, executive session is confidential. Anything that's
is Dina and Beth on the line?
This is Dina, I'm here.
Okay, Beth.
He's dialing in now. It may take just a moment.
Okay. Okay. There's one other person on the line. Could you identify yourself, please?
We are back at 7 at 10:22. All right. Let's wait for our members to return. Did you enjoy your break?
Of course.
We just dialed in, please.
Hi, this is Beth Henke.
Okay, thanks, Beth.
All right. We will now have a status update on the Artist Youth Team. Someone could step forward. Introduce yourself.
Yes, Ted Williams, President of the Art Institute of Phoenix.
And those on the phone representing AI?
Tina Eckel.
She must have pushed her button again.
You're muted, buddy. We have provided, as requested, the list of the current roster by the due date and 120 days worth of drops that was provided before the end of 2016. We've also provided all transcripts, and we're in the process of pulling all ledgers. We've also provided a financial update that the board has received, and those would be my initial comments, and turn things over to Beth or Dean if they have any other comments that they'd like to make.
Would you like to make any other statements?
Beth or Dean, I do not have any additional comments.
So the materials you provided are in PDFs or something similar?
They're in PDF format, that's correct.
So we're not going to get 52,000 boxes?
We're not. You've got the flash drive right there.
We have learned from our 10,000 square foot warehouse.
Search for PDFs for a bit to go. Just checking. At the October 27th, 16 board meeting, the state board had proposed a consent agreement for a non-disciplinary probation requiring $2,047,730 bonds. The consent agreement has been signed, the surety bond has been received, so I think that gives everybody a little bit more comfort going forward. We obviously wish you the best and hope that things are going to go forward well, but we have learned lessons, and it's been very recent past. Does anyone have any questions on the materials that were provided?
No, ma'am.
They will probably be scheduled for an update at the April meeting.
Thank you very much for coming, for being on the phone, and participating in the executive session. Wish you well. Keep us posted, please.
Great. Thank you.
And thanks for being efficient with your material.
Thank you, Beth and Dina.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is an update on UEI College. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Sanjay Sodha. I'm the CFO for UEI College of ICE.
Hi, I'm Shokri Thiyav. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for IIT.
I'm Ravina Miller, Campus President.
Good morning, Aaron Mortensen, Senior Vice President and General Counsel.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your August 2016 meeting, the Complaint Committee reviewed an anonymous complaint and determined to open a complaint. In September 2016, ACICS issued a compliance warning letter based upon the anonymous complaint that they also received. At your October meeting, the board reviewed the renewal of the 2016 regular voc and regular degree granting license and the complaint in the ACICS compliance warning letter. The board approved the renewals but placed UEI on non-disciplinary probation. And through a consent agreement, UEI agreed to the probation and increased the surety bond to $170,000 from $120,000 to continue quarterly reporting and other reporting requirements.
We did receive the surety, the additional surety bond on December 1st. On January 10th, ACICF closed the investigation and determined that UEI had satisfactorily addressed the concerns. However, also in January, as you know, Ed released the gainful employment ratio. Several of UEI programs were identified as failing. And I'll have UEI provide to you a update regarding their intent on these programs. And that is my update for UEI.
Like,
yeah, I can take that one. So for our OPID that includes the Phoenix campus, there are two programs that are in failing. One is cosmetology. We don't offer that in Phoenix. We only offer that in Florida. So that's a non-issue for the Phoenix campus. There's also an associates program that's in failing, and we don't offer that in Phoenix either. And we've actually discontinued offering that in Florida as well. So that's in a teach-out mode right now. So both of those programs are failing or not.
So both of the programs are doing teach out for the students?
For the cosmetology program, we're trying to work on the earnings and figure out how we can get that up and look at our tuition and see what we can do over there. But for the other program, the associates program, we're teaching that up.
And the associates program was in what discipline?
It was in associates in healthcare.
Okay.
And there are no students in Arizona?
No students, no, for neither program.
How is, I see that you decided to seek, again, same thing as last time, what were your accreditation? So you're going with ACCET?
Correct.
How's that? Where are you at in that process?
We have an established relationship with ASTIT. We already have 8 campuses in California that are accredited by ASTIT and are doing really well. And so we're adding Phoenix as a branch campus. We've notified the Department of Education. We also sent a letter to the Arizona Department of Education about our intent to move to ASTIT. We're currently in the process of getting programs approved by ASTIT that are offered in Phoenix. When that's added, then we'll add as a branch campus. Our goal is to have us approved by the end of this year by ASTIT, and we're marching well along that path. Anything to add?
No, that's correct. It's a two-step process working with ASSET, and we're in phase one.
So I'm assuming that having it done as a branch campus for ASSET, additional location for Ed, is a smoother process and attempting to get.
That's correct.
That's
correct.
That's
smart.
Anyone have any other questions? Okay,
so do we have an update on current enrollment and financials? I'm looking at something that's a little dated, electronically, and I wouldn't want to do that.
No, we have not gotten those yet.
Okay.
The December ones are not due until February 15th.
Okay.
The finance committee.
Would you like to comment on quarterly as far as what happened in the fall?
Sure. Our current enrollment is sitting at about 182. We're a little bit behind budget there with our dialogue, I think. Or so. Our break even remains the same, which is around 300 mark is when we would be break even. But again, you know, I always like to talk about this as we picked up 3 distressed campuses, went out of business. I brought them in, taught them all out. So we have impact from some of them still, where we're still in loss making mode. But we're determined, and we're making significant investments to make sure that we get to a profitable state. The one thing that IEC is very committed towards for UI colleges in Phoenix is we're not cutting any cost when it comes to providing services to our students, whether it's career services, whether it's student supplies in the classroom, whether it's any equipment. So we are very much dedicated to making sure students have a great experience. So we are losing money, but that's because of that reason. But we're very confident under the new leadership that we have, we're going to turn that around this year and bring it to a positive state.
Thank you.
And when do we want to invite them back to give the next update?
They will be before the Finance Committee in March, and so it will be in April.
Okay. And in between, obviously, keep us updated with any of the changes in the activity and progress. And just put it out there, I hope we can not see you as part of the Complaint Committee. Sounds like you're really trying to not.
Yes.
Okay. All right. See you for the next update.
Thank you.
on to licensing. The first group are conditional to regular vocational program license renewal. The first one is Accor Healthcare. Mr. Simon from Accor. Should we make questions for up and down?
I'd be willing, since I'm doing both, and I see Mr. David's here, I'd be willing to switch their thoughts and the agenda and the thought that he might show up.
I would prefer to continue with the other two conditional, and then...
Understood.
Do we need to make a motion to do that? So we will hold a court and then see if he has come or done with the conditional group, and if not, then we will see if we can squeeze him in the conditional and... All right, then, Meditation Teacher Academy.
Good morning. I'm Sarah McLean. I'm the owner and director of the academy.
Okay.
Ms. Madam Chair, members of the board, at your October 2015 meeting, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for Meditation Teacher Academy with the stipulation to maintain a $15,000 surety bond. As you stated, they are now seeking to go from a conditional to regular license.
Just make a brief statement about how things are going.
Things are going well. It was a little slow there at the end of last year, but we've got regular enrollments. What's a surprise is we actually have one of our teachers who is here for her conditional license today, and she can report probably a little better than I can what it's like on the user side of it. We have so much success with our teachers all around the world. We have people that are starting their own meditation centers in Austin. There's just a big one there. We have people that are moving on to corporate training. We have people that are training in schools and in attorney's offices. We have teachers all over the country. And we have teachers in Canada. We just had our second teacher who just enrolled from Hong Kong. So it's going well. It's a very rigorous course. It's not just, even though I'm from Sedona, it's not a woo-woo, it's not intangible, it's very focused on academics, research, brain science, the science of physiology. So people leave feeling really ready to bring meditation and stress reduction to whatever population asks them to.
Do you get any complaints that it's not woo-woo? People might be expecting that.
Well, they know, because, I mean, seriously, this enrollment agreement, if they ever thought it was woo-woo, they are quickly corrected. No, people... If they're seeking that, there's plenty of them, Sedona. And a lot of unlicensed organizations as well that are, you know, under the guise of religious organizations who run metaphysical trainings and things like that. But I really, you know, for me, I've been in this industry for about 25 years, and I'm very grounded. Very grounded. And I think my students appreciate it.
But I happen to be the lead on your packet, and I think you did a very good job last time and this time.
Thank you.
But I have to ask questions.
Sure.
It was my favorite main chair.
Okay. I hope I have the answers. If not, we can look at this together.
It would be cool if you had the answers. Leave of absence. Students have a hard enough time following all of the rules of which are too many. And so you have combined your extension of leave of absence into one thing. This is on page 3 of 9.
Right.
On your very recent agreement. But you did number the pages, right? I think you could ask.
You're welcome.
So it's section 6.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like to know about it specifically?
I would recommend that you have extension as a step. I think in leave of absence, because they are kind of two different things. So the leave of absence would be like anywhere in the middle of the program, they need a break, you specify what they can have.
Yeah.
And extension is kind of like, you know, more at the end. So
it's
not a requirement, but it would be appreciated if you divide them up so we don't see in front of the complaint committee drive it out for the dollars or
I hear you. So let me ask you a question if you don't mind. Is it required to have a leave of absence in this normative event?
Okay. You need to state what your policies are, and so you are allowed to have a leave of absence policy, and then you have to state what your requirements are, and you don't want it to be very open-ended from a business sense, so you want to say if a leave is allowed and what the terms of it are allowed. Like, some schools don't allow the students to take leave when they're in the middle of a course or a term. They have to do it at a set place unless it's, you know, perhaps a bigger emergency. So you can make whatever your rules are.
Okay.
You just have to be clear about them.
Right.
And then you have to adhere to them. A lot of people complain and never see one in my head, guys. So typically people will say the students may take up to one leave, they can't exceed often 180 days, just because it's a federal rule, and so people tend to use that because it's for the industry standard. But you can have it very short. Depending on the size length of your program, you can choose it to be a week, 2 weeks, whatever you want, but just stay.
So this part of the program, a lot of it is distance learning. So they're, you know, they're in whatever state or town they're in, and so we don't really know if we have enrollment. We have mentors that keep up with them and make notes on them, and so some of them do just stop doing something because their mother's sick or they're going through a divorce or something. So I think what I'll do, if it's all right with you, is take it out, because ultimately the effect of a leave of absence turns out to be they need more time to finish the program. So if I get very clear about the extension, I think that would probably solve.
Yeah, because the leave of absence typically means that it's a blackout period. So when they're on a leave, they're not doing any work. And whereas an extension is, we're giving you more time to finish the work, which would be more inactive. So it may be that your intention is not to have a leave.
Right.
So if you take out here, be sure you take out everywhere else, your website, your a lot of things.
Okay, good.
The next thing is on your refund policy.
Mm-hmm.
Farther up on that same page, your refund policy correctly says there's more than 50% no refund is required. But then elsewhere, the third bullet right above number 6, it says after the student has completed 50% of the program, he or she is not due any refund.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually has to be more than 50%, so like right at 50%,
oh, more than
lower refund. Okay. So if you just insert completed more than 50% of the program. And on page 5 of 9, this is a question in my ignorance of your type of program. At number 10, you say the student is not permitted to teach the SED meditation method of both himself or herself in MMI certified meditation and mindfulness teacher until he or she has received his or certificate of completion.
Yes.
Certified usually means something very specific. So are they truly certified or have they just finished the program?
They finished the program. We certify them in some way to teach and use our teaching materials. I mean, they are able to do that. What ends up happening in the world of meditation, because it's not regulated, is that they tend to, people can take a meditation class with me just right off the street, and then they think they should teach all of their students and or clients and or whatever. And I really want to make it clear that even if they're enrolled, and I'm even seeing this sometimes with some of the people that are enrolled, they think immediately they should be out teaching, and I don't feel comfortable that they should teach until the program is complete, they receive their certificate. So that could be the wrong word, but I feel like
my thing is whatever program.
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually it means an industry-recognized national outside of your school body that certifies. So
I'm
not real comfortable with that word. I just can't tell you what to put in there.
The certificate is fine. Certificate
of completion.
If she's getting a certificate.
I know it's challenging because there is no industry world, specific. I'd like to create a board. I've talked about it. I've actually gotten a couple of other meditation teacher training programs and their directorships interested in that. But between some of them are affiliated with universities, others are just standalone non-licensed programs. And there's, you can go ahead and become a meditation teacher online for, if you just pay $150 for an 8-hour multiple choice question. Or it's crazy. So I really want to keep the standards high.
There are many things you can do on the internet that perhaps are not. There you go.
What is it? I will be
too.
Does anyone want to get married? There you go. it would be good to take out the word certified because in industry it means something different. So take that word out and perhaps just say until they have successfully completed the program, until they graduate the program, so terminology.
Okay.
So that they're, and if you would, before she gives you your license, send her what the word is going to be so she can make that, make sure that.
I'll send you a whole new,
enrollment agreement.
And probably the course catalog with the changes.
Right? Usually, one changes the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my only other note, is cross-referencing the catalog. Right? But, yeah. So that was not only three of the launches. Anyone else got any questions?
I had a question on page 6 of the enrollment agreement. On the non-compete clause, given the fact that students enroll to become meditation teachers, it struck me as almost paradoxical that there would be a non-compete for 4 years that they couldn't teach or teach teachers, or they couldn't work in another school. And it seems that the intention is to enroll to become a teacher.
Right.
And then there's a non-compete.
I understand what you're saying, and maybe it's unclear here, which I'm happy to explain and see if that's the problem is the wording. So some people, do you remember the yoga phase where all of a sudden yoga was popular and anybody could open a yoga studio, and then it was sort of...
Oh, yes, we would.
So meditation and the mindfulness craze literally is happening now. And people are seeing the possibility of financial gain from it. Again, what I'm talking about here is, let's say Becky gets trained as a meditation teacher with me. I would want Becky to wait 4 years. I think it's 4 years, so I'm not looking at.
Yeah.
I'm asking her to wait 4 years before she opens up her own meditation teacher training school to train other meditation teachers. Because I want her to go out in the industry and teach people first. You can't become a teacher and then teach teachers without having any experience.
It also says that she can't become an employee of another school.
Well, what happens is she can become an employee of another school, but she cannot set up another school with someone. And this is what's starting to happen is we've got these people recruiting my teachers to take my lesson plans, to take my syllabus, and to set up their own school. That's what they're doing. And that just doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me because the people that are setting it up again are looking for financial gain only rather than quality of product. And for me, I really want people to get this. It's like saying, let's say you take a fitness training and you learn how to be a personal fitness trainer and you don't actually ever go out and do it. Instead, what you do is go out and train other people to become fitness trainers. And you have no actual experience in the profession itself, other than going through the training. Does this make sense?
I hear what you're saying, but number one, it does say that Becky can't be an Becky and other graduates cannot be employed.
I see where you're saying that. Can you point to tell me which
clause 14? So I hear what you're saying. Well, number one, to be an employee of another school. So does that mean that she can't work at a school that teaches meditation instruction as a faculty member, or maybe just not as a faculty member, but as a staff member who's offering meditation classes, number one. Number two, I hear your point about maintaining the quality of the instruction, but at the same time, why 4 years? Why not 7 years or 3 years or 2 years or 1 year? It's somewhat arbitrary.
It is arbitrary.
And at the same time, I could make the statement that it's a restraint of trade, that a student comes, they're trained as a teacher, and now they're prohibited from teaching other teachers.
That's right. It's just my experience, and I've been in this, like I said, I've been in this industry for years. I became, I trained as a meditation teacher in 1993, and I did not open the school for years. If you were, in the traditional sense, going to a teacher and learning, they would say it would be 10 years in this particular world. So for me, I went by my own, sort of my own instinct, my own experience. We could ask Becky what she thinks, if she wants to. Chime in on it. I really want people to deliver high quality training to other teachers. I really do, and it's maybe it's me. Maybe I shouldn't have my standards so high. Maybe they could all just open up an online training school and start asking people for the $180 or $35 to become meditation teachers. Maybe I shouldn't restrain the trade, but it's just my integrity. But if it doesn't work for you and the
board, let's ask for a little legal advice, because honestly, when I read that, I was thrown off on it, and then I thought, well, I haven't
accounted for, and it doesn't sound like the women are getting all jobs for that particular job.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they fit to, because I've always heard in a right-to-work state that you can't really restrict somebody's employment like that, that they're a scare thing, but, you know, what's more enforceable is a non-solicitation agreement versus a non-compete agreement, so, but I don't know that to be fact.
And are your materials copyrighted?
Here we go. And you could be setting yourself up for some liability.
Uh-huh. It says about consent, though. So here's what happened. I'll give you a real-life example. There was a woman who wanted to come to my program. She had never even meditated, but she wanted to be a meditation teacher because she saw the opportunity to create a school without even ever even, like saying I want to be opening a cooking school and not even being able to cook. And so she wanted to do it, and she and I would not approve her application because she didn't have the prerequisites of being a meditator, and we take their word for it. She blatantly said she didn't do it. So she opened a center, a meditation center anyway, in Austin, Texas, called the Meditation Bar. She hired about four or five of our certified or approved, meditation approved teachers, and they're doing great there. And they've all been employed by her. She didn't open up a teacher training. It's not as easy as it sounds, unless you're sort of anonymous online doing it. So they can work for her, but she's not trying to set up a meditation teacher academy, so to speak. So I can change it in whatever way you feel is more appropriate. I just, I'm glad you listened to my reasoning on it. Do you want to ask Kelly Lawyer here? This covenant, I mean, it does include the non-solicitation in the end of the clause. I think you should listen to your attorney, but in Arizona, non-competes are challenged pretty frequently in court, and not for the benefit of the person who voted it. Just as an FYI.
That's been my experience as
yes.
Well.
Non-compete is an issue with retraining as well.
So given her licensure, is she required to change this? Is it suggested she change this, or just free of
licensure? If her attorney thinks it's defensible, that's between her and her attorney.
Read the fine print from your attorney.
Okay. And what I would like to say is I think it's sort of like an obstacle so that people get, okay, I get it, I'll wait 4 years. And I'm totally happy. I employ them to work for me.
The challenge is going to be that it's a teaching academy for teachers, and that for any vocational training, you're teaching people to start a vocation.
Yeah.
But then your clause is pretty much for the next 4 years, you can't start that vocation.
The relation is the teaching someone to meditate.
Yeah, I do draw the distinction. I know what you're saying. You have teaching meditation, which you require of these people who go, and then you have teaching the teacher to teach meditation. So I get the distinction, but I don't get it in your thing. To me, back to Dr. Mittman's point, it looks like you're even saying it can't work.
Okay.
You
know, the way it's written is a little ambiguous. Basically, they can't develop or assist in the development of their own program. And then on the tail end of that, they can't use the stuff that they learned in your program. So it's almost a complete bar. So,
well, all my materials are copywritten.
Yeah, so all, and I get that, because it says you cannot use any material developed by NMI. And that's fine, but then at the beginning of that, you say that they can't develop or assist in the development of their own training program.
I would suggest that you practice an attachment and just trust that if the SEED program really engages your students in a certain way that you intend, that the vast majority of them will operate with integrity. And, in a sense, you don't want to create a rule to deal with the rare exception. And it's a big rule. And from a mindfulness standpoint, let it go sometimes. I understand the reasoning and at the same time as a prospective student, especially given the, you know, the list of kind of experienced people, physicians, nurses, midwives, psychologists, et cetera, many of whom could come to the school with many years of experience. And they can be right on the cusp of doing that. And in that respect, you're facilitating them to move on and increase the awareness of meditation together with you by participating or even opening meditation.
Yeah, I just, as a theme, I'm noticing, for example, in 12, it says to maintain his or her active status, the graduate. So it almost seems in a lot of the materials that you're trying to engage someone even further after their program is over by requiring them to attend continuing ed. What does that requirement look like? And you also have... similar in 11, where you're encouraging, and it says the graduate, to go do 2 free sessions. And so it just seems like, are you putting additional requirements on someone who's already completed the program, and what happens if they don't?
Well, that's a great question. So when someone graduates from our program, we offer free online support. We offer free.
No cost.
No cost. Zero cost.
Can't pay free.
No, okay, so there's no cost to joining any of our monthly online programs, and we are really there to support them, whether they want to move into the world of athletes or the world of corporate or going to the prison systems. We're there to support them with people who have had the experience of doing that. So it's all available at no cost, and we have an online support group, which is also all available at no cost. You know, maybe I should be clear about this here. When people go through the program and then they hibernate and we never hear from them again, we generally will not refer to them, because we like to refer to people who are actually teaching versus having someone call you and say, hey, I'd like you to teach me to meditate, and have you not ever return their phone call.
So, perhaps if the intent here is that in order to be able to be gainfully employed as a teacher, does it behoove them to remain active?
Yeah.
Or is it a requirement? Like, am I not allowed to hire somebody who has been dormant for a couple of years? I don't think I could.
You could do anything you want.
There you go. Especially on the internet.
Right.
So you might just want to consider changing this.
The wording?
The wording is sort of like when you're making suggestions though to fire for employment, and we have that as a common theme here, that people will say, to be admitted, you can do this. If you get a job, you have to have something else entirely. So if you are letting them know that, hey, not just graduating here, but if you want to be employed in this, you need to invest in yourself beyond this and continue to do it, that would make sense. But my husband's an architect. He is required, like legally, in order to remain licensed, he has to do continuing ed.
Well, that's a license.
You know, because it's a license, right? That is a requirement.
Right.
Yours isn't a requirement. Right. That's the difference. Like, it behooves us to continue to be educated, mm-hmm. but I don't think people are not going to hire me if I didn't take a class this year. But yours is making it sound like you must.
Okay.
So must and may and should and suggest. So I would suggest that you change this wording to have it not be a requirement, but be a
recommendation.
So is that long then in this enrollment agreement?
Your enrollment agreement has so much more than I believe that it needs to be.
I mean, it's pretty,
you know, they're pretty big. And you can always refer to your catalogs. All your cards and sheets are in your catalog.
Okay.
So you don't have to repeat everything in your enrollment agreement. You would just refer to your catalog. And if you do have it in both places, you change one word. You have to change it in both. So it actually does use you to have a little more streamlined enrollment agreement and a hearty catalog, and you refer to it. And people in the enrollment agreement do sign saying, I have the catalog.
Right.
So
that's why.
Okay.
So we would tell you that you can't have an IP enrollment agreement, but I can tell you that
unusual.
Is that really? We have worse. Well, longer. We have longer.
Longer.
And then we've had shorter.
Madam Chair, let clarify for me. Are you, you are requiring this be revised, correct?
I believe so. Based on the points the other members made, it does seem like she's saying something is a requirement that actually is not.
Frankie was saying, it makes you sound like you're a licensing entity.
You know, I understand that, and I think that deep down, I really want to create standards for the industry. So I think that's where I go with this, but that's not my job.
Can you write an agreement
it should focus on your program at hand and up to the point they graduate. You cannot really require anything of them.
Okay.
That's the end of your contract.
Okay.
You're promising them A to Z for X amount of money. That's it. So anything that comes after graduation,
I'll let them know about it and make it optional.
Yeah, tell them it's available and tell them that, that the reasons why it would behoove them to do it, but they shouldn't be in their enrollment agreement committing that they're going to do the continuing, because it's an option and it's a preference. But if it were me, I would not have any enrollment agreement. But I would definitely put it in the catalog, because it's lovely that you're offering that. Mm-hmm. I think it will help them do a better job and keep up on things for having it. So, mm-hmm. so don't take away doing it, but... Yeah, not
the
pilot. That was
a
good catch.
And I'll put that same, I'll treat the other closet sort of sketchy there in the same way. Take it out of the enrollment agreement.
What number was that? With
that was the one with the non-compete number
14. 11.
11.
11. And it may appear other places, but I think it's also the tone of the document series, so you might want to just review that.
Yeah, and I hope you don't take this as constructive. I think it's lovely that you have some passion and you want to bring standards. The chair of the complaint committee, I one for one appreciate that a lot. But we're just trying not to get you twisted up where you're getting out of your lane and stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. There's things you can do, there's things you can't do. But I applaud you for wanting to have standards and stuff like that.
And we're highly motivated to not see you at the complaint
committee. Okay, so... Oh, then I just send it all to you, Terry. You know what happens? Okay.
Right. Any other questions? Okay. I make the motion. We grant additional regular vocational program license. To connect the requirements to licensure pursuant to ARS 32-3021-B20. And grant the license.
Second.
Applicant
is based upon the gross tuition revenue, and it's at the board's discretion whether they require the bond to be increased or not.
Okay.
So that is your.
So it's actually, we're asking you to agree to stipulation to increase the bond from $15,000 to $25,000 to just round it to the even number. So would you agree that to be?
Yes. And the required changes that noted in the discussion.
Okay. You'll make the changes that are here before to release.
Yeah, I'll communicate to you.
Thank you.
I'll try.
I'll second.
That motion second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is passed. Congratulations.
Thank
good
you.
Luck.
Thank you very much.
Have fun working.
I should say I was in Sedona last month and walked by your school on several occasions.
Come on up.
It was really a nice serendipity. It's really sweet.
Come up and meditate with us.
Okay. have the folks from Afford Healthcare
come forward? No. I don't think they're here yet. Something must have happened because he communicated he would be here.
Then we'll wait for him to return to find out if he has questions that he would require to be answered before we can grant it through inside for his new bit. We also wait for that meeting and give him a little bit more time. All right, we just need just a couple moments, then we will come back to the next item.
My general expense team is seeking renewal of the conditional to write a vocational license. At your meeting in at the Finance Committee, the Finance Committee did review the financial statements for my general expense team and recommends that
the $100,000 surety bond be maintained and that they continue quarterly reporting. Here representing the institution is Dr. Fulcher, and board member lead is Mr. Jacob.
Welcome, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning.
Can you say your name for the record?
I'm William Fulcher. I'm the Director of Education at my dental office in the institution.
Okay. Dr. Fulcher, give us an update on how the school and the business is going.
Everything's going well. The third quarter, or the fourth quarter, was our best yet, and January has maintained that trend, so everything's going well.
So I noticed, you know, based on your June 16 financials, had a bit of a loss of $68,000, but in September you're at about $28,000 loss, so things are trending better, you're saying, and you had better enrollments in the last quarter as well?
Enrollment, not so much. Enrollment's pretty much maintained the same, but the dental side of
the dental side of the clinical
is picked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about how you think you're going to improve your enrollments.
Well, we have a new student advisor that's helping with the enrollment, and in the 2 weeks she's been there, I think we've had five or six sign up already. So that's helping. In our last year, the spring was, the spring and summer was a lot better enrollment than the fall and winter. And so maybe that's just a trend. I don't know. And, you know, for us so far it has been. So, you know, we're just continuing to get our name out there and maintain what we're doing. So
I know you expressed some concerns about the financial health of the school, and so how are you feeling as far as your financial position and things moving forward with the school?
We're 100% confident that, like Ace said, that 99% confident that it'll continue in a positive trend.
Okay. Can we get an update on that lawsuit that was happening?
It's dismissed.
It was dismissed. Okay, yeah. Good. All right. Any other questions from anybody?
I have a few.
What's that?
I have a few.
Yeah.
We discussed before the advertising budget. That's not here. That's reduced with everybody. Companies still decided with $5,000 advertising budget.
I don't know what you can get for that.
Okay.
That's their choice.
On your enrollment agreement, which is 7 pages, not 9.
Yeah, when you said 9, and that was lengthy, I was like, ooh, mine's approaching that.
It was lengthy a couple times ago,
too, I think. You have lots of white space in this, so I bet even if you just format it differently, you have that. But that's in there. On page 3 of 7, the top, section D, option 4, secured outside financing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very confusing. You're saying that the student can get student loans, workforce grant, GoFundMe account, basically whatever. Students will be charged interest per their source of funding, if applicable. And then you say tuition must be paid full for the student's first day of class. The student's total out-of-pocket will be that of option 2. You're saying that some of the sources of funding are used may have some interest and fees, but then you're stating it's full out-of-pocket, which I would think that means you can pay the interest only. So total out-of-pocket means everything that's costing them. It's really what you're charging them. So you're saying that if they get funding from other sources, you're going to allow them the discount, essentially, option 2. But the way you're wording it, you're using the word total out-of-pocket, and that is not accurate.
Okay.
So total tuition with whatever charges.
Okay.
And then we charge interest for the source of funding if they're not paid in full by time the class starts or by the time the class ends?
No, it's just whatever. I mean, we have a relationship with Compass Bank, and they offer a student loan for us.
Okay.
And so whatever their interest rates are then, but Compass Bank pays us in full, which is the $4,250. And so they're paid per us. They just now owe Compass Bank.
So
that makes it even more.
Yeah, so it's not worth because the it is possible that, like, on the GoFundMe, it could be that there are some, you know, grandmas made a commitment to give $100 a month. So you're actually saying that if they get funding from any outside source and pay you in full by the start, you will give them this rate of $47.50. That's really not what this is saying. So I think that an entire re-explanation of what deduction flooding is required to state.
It's a little convoluted, yeah.
Not to be rude, but I don't
know. Excuse me, yeah.
Same thing on page 8 of 17 of your enrollment agreement. You have two places here where you talk about total out-of-pocket expenses. Mm-hmm. And again, that phrase is not accurate. And then a clarification question on page 15 of 17.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you're talking about graduation requirements, assessable completion, and this is just a question that I couldn't tell. Are they allowed to make up, if they are tardy or have been absent, are they allowed to make up, or if once they hit four absences, they're just out of luck and they are not going to be able to do it?
The makeup, the absence policy is that they can miss up to four class periods, or if there's Saturday class, two Saturdays.
Okay, so I miss two Saturdays. I have no option to make up. I'm out of luck. I cannot graduate. I just have to, I'm the boots run at this. There's no option to do anything. I can't make arrangements with you to make it up on a different Saturday. I'm just out of luck.
I would have to review the withdrawal policy. As far as it's written there, yes.
I understand how it's written. I'm just asking about your intention.
Yes. There are only nine Saturdays, so if you miss more than two, it's kind of hard to.
I said frequently, and I would say generally, schools do allow students to the same as you come up. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can have at that point the leave of absence would take place, and then they more than likely would be in the next class.
Hopefully, we won't see each other completely.
That is my hope as well.
Just clarify for the board that when the finance committee reviewed the financials in December, Mr. Walbert made a correction. If you look at the balance sheet, it lists current liabilities at $425,112, which would have made the current ratio negative. But Mr. Walter correctly pointed out that the audited statement showed that a good portion of that is long-term debt and not debt that would be paid in this next 12 years. And so that should be changed in the future, but just for the board's information that it's long-term debt, not current debt, and so the current ratio is not.
Okay. Thank you. And it has
the. Any other questions?
Like
a motion to approve conditional to regular vocational program license renewal application with the stipulation to maintain the $100,000 surety bond and continue quarterly reporting, please. Perfect. Do that?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
And a motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll ask this against the record. Is Gordon upstairs here?
He's on his way.
Okay. Then we will walk him down to the
Inwood Museum.
So we will move on to conditional to regular vocational program license renewal and supplemental license application for a new program, Computer Learning Center. I believe this is the door.
George David, Computer Learning Center.
Ms. Kendall?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your October meeting, the board reviewed the 2016 conditional to regular vocational program license renewal the supplemental license application for a new program and the supplemental license application for a change of location. The board approved the change of location, but deferred action on the conditional to regular license renewal and the supplemental application for a new program. There were significant deficiencies with both applications, as well as the $1,600 late fee imposed on the submission of the license renewal. The prior report and the list of the deficiencies for the various documents were provided to you. On December 27th, Mr. Davis submitted revised documents. It appears that many of the deficiencies had been addressed of the technical nature. However, there are still a few remaining issues of the $1,600 late fee on the submission of the license renewal. Mr. David strongly disagrees with this fee that was imposed. It's not imposed by staff. It's actually in statute. On the submission of the license renewal, the programs, I am concerned that the programs are viable. The catalog clearly states that a high school diploma, associate's, bachelor's degree might be required for gainful employment. However, the basic admissions requirement of 7th grade reading level and comprehension basic computer skills, there's huge difference. I have provided to you all the prior documents, and Mr. David is here to answer any of your questions.
Any opening statement? Good to see everybody. Happy New Year. And we got real busy fixing all the recommendations that you gave us to the actual deficiencies on the actual financial summaries and so on, make sure they matched what's in the applications. The catalog, four or five different areas we improved. We got it all fixed. The website, we did, there was recommendations to match what's in the database. That's also been taken care of and turned in. Program listing and so on. So we took your advice, and we appreciate your recommendations, and we went ahead and corrected all of the deficiencies. Other than that, we're looking forward to...
Yeah, we'll say that, you know, because I've been, as you know, Mr. David, I've been in review for the past couple of years, so this is clear in a lot of sense, you know, as far as the technical difficulties.
Thank you.
That being said, you know, I appreciate having the bachelor's degree maybe requires a work, but I do too worry. I don't think anything statutorily is going to allow me to change that, but I do worry about some of these courses, and I want to talk specifically about the new proposed foreign language course, because we have two things on the agenda today, interpretation. I just don't understand what you're trying to do with that course.
Which one?
The new course you're on.
Okay.
New program.
Yes,
foreign
sir.
Language translation.
Yes, sir.
The reason I don't understand it is I never saw anywhere in your literature where it's like full medical or technical translation or whatever. It's just called foreign language translation and preparation. And your prerequisite to come to that course is fluency in English and fluency in the language of which they're going to be translators in. So, can you talk to me? I just don't understand what the, because a lot of times, because I've seen, you know, medical interpretation, legal interpretation, technical interpretation courses, which that I can get, because if you speak a foreign language, just like if you speak English and you're not in that field, you might not know the correct vernacular to use. So, but this is just kind of open-ended translator, and they're already fluent in the language, so I don't understand.
If I had an advisory job, if I speak Spanish and in English, I know how to translate, so how is this a program? We're licensing a program to help people get a job.
Right.
So if I'm already fluent, what are you going to do to make it be a career for me?
Thank you for interpreting my
question. Okay, good question. I appreciate that question. The reason this came up, it's a military defense requirement that we get interpreters I'm in the military. I'm retired 20 years military. I have a lot of connections in the military. And there was a question asked, can we produce translators or interpreters and provide them to the Department of Defense to be deployed? Now, that's a little different than just going to the courtroom and then interpreting for someone a ticket or something. So we're gearing more toward GSA contracts for the Defense Department where they require certain skill, not just knowing. If you know Spanish, for example, there's a different protocol, if you will, when you're working in translation for Department of Defense. There are certain things, and the teachers that we hired are already experienced in that field. So mainly what's going to drive this program is the GSA contract for Department of Defense. They require to have translators to be deployed to the theater that are going to know the protocol and the culture, not just the language. So this is a little more to it than just...
Yeah, but none of that. I agree with that, and that makes sense to me, and I see that. I take it to some relation to you, because you shared your set of men with a very strong resume and, you know, Arabic, and, you know, has done,
exactly.
done DOD work. I get that. But none of that's articulated to the community in the program, which you've listed here. It clearly just says, you know, it's non-specific. I mean, it just... And I'm left as a consumer wondering what I'm getting if I already speak the language, you know. So maybe you want to put something more geared towards defense. I don't know, you know. Again, I've never seen that when it's not pointed at something, especially if you require them to speak the language already coming in.
Well, and how do you measure that? How do you know that the student speaks the language fluently and correctly? Like, is there do you have them do Berlitz? I mean, is there a test to make sure that they... before
you're teaching them. Well, that was another question I had as well. I don't know what your measurement for.
We do have a software that as a prerequisite they'll have to take to verify that they know the language, the original language, and they go into target language. But at least as an English speaker, we want to make sure they know how to speak English. And then this is really geared towards folks that are native to that language. So in other words, if we're going to get Spanish folks, we need to have native Hispanic speakers to do that. And if we're going to do Arabic, we're doing the two languages, Arabic and Hispanic, and we want native Arabic immigrants to be working in this field because they know the culture.
So then the faculty speak those two languages as well?
The faculty, yes ma'am, definitely, yeah.
So it's
really the faculty is good. I mean, he provided me that. That's not the question I have. The question I have initially was the one that we just all asked, which is it's not quantified or qualified at all what this is for.
Okay. Or
specific or focused on, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And then a little bit later to your question, Doctor, was, you know, it says you must be generally fluent, but you don't list anywhere where how you're going to measure general fluency.
And that's just real quick. I think that if I'm understanding now what you're saying, which I did not pick up from your materials, which is a problem for us from a consumer standpoint, but so this is essentially people that English is a second language, and so it's more coming from that end, that going from their native language to translating to English that you don't learn. Okay. Now at least I get why it would be a job. But I think your materials are not adequate to, if I were a consumer, to understand.
They're not
at this point. So now at least we understand what you're doing, which is a good thing, but I do believe these materials are problematic.
I agree with you on that. We can move on from that program. I like how you articulated what you want to do here. I just think we need to see a revision of that. Just not the whole application, just the new program application.
Sure.
To much further define it. So just put yourself, Mr. David, in the you know, consumer seat, saying you don't know anything about it and you're kind of stumbling upon it and stuff like that. I have no doubt you'd probably tell them about it once they meet with you and stuff like that, but we need to be in writing for protection purposes and stuff like that. So we can move off of that unless you have any other questions on the Spanish language or that.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
Sir David, you said that you complied with all of the requests from the board, but did you pay the $1,600?
He disagrees.
So where are we with that?
Can I ask, from a regulatory or legal standpoint, why are we
having this, the rest of this conversation beyond if you paid it or you didn't pay it, because it seems that to get to get renewal, that has to be paid. That's not negotiable. And so for us, it puts us in a role of being your consultants to continue to improve your material. And so I guess
it's a little logistic.
Was the renewal paid without the late fees?
The renewal fee itself was paid.
Okay.
It's the late fees.
And 2 days of late fee was paid also, $200.
But I understand that. You know, yes. I respect you, the work that you're doing, and your position that you feel that you owe a certain amount of late fees. On the other hand, the board, because of the regulatory...
So, Dr. Mittman, the reason why it's here again in front of the board is because minus the fee, there still was a question as to whether or not the application was acceptable before you can do an outright denial. The denial is what would tip off a hearing and an appeal and a JRA, logistically allowing Mr. David a chance to ask the board to take a look at the fee to see if it is a fair fee or if, you know, it's not, was a little bit more feasible than going down the path of denial based on the fee plus the hearing expenses.
Can I make a motion to go into executive session? I need to, based on that, I need a lot more clarification of what I'm doing here today.
Can I add something before you go into
just second? I've got to get a second on the table, and then we can have a conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, motion is 2 seconds.
Oh, sure. I've got it.
Okay.
Items in executive session. So I'd like to go through the application now. Again, I started off by saying, you know, although we've spent a long time coming, this is a lot more of a complete application. It looks a heck of a lot better than any of them I've seen. So thank you. Thank you. I've responded that through that. So, sans the new program, because I already talked about what I wanted to talk about there. We'll move on to my next set of questions. This is more for Ms. Stansfield. The surety bond, I don't see a rating on it anywhere. Am I just missing it?
Usually we don't ask for the continued rating.
Oh, I thought it was in statute.
It has to be A, but after once they're enforced, as a continued, we have to check it.
Okay, so we don't know. Do you know what Great American's rate is?
I have no idea. I can find out.
We can go on
fast,
and if there is an issue, I'll let you know. If you want me to, yeah, I'll do that.
That'd be nice, yeah. Nothing that's going to stop. And you corrected the certificate of insurance. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
It's updated. Yes, sir. It's good for 17. So we're there. On the enrollment agreement, tab 7, number 8 at the bottom, page 104. Students enroll under the VA, both rehab, city, city council. Are you VA approved?
We used to be.
Well,
we haven't renewed.
Okay.
We're pending this to do that.
Yeah, you need to strike that. The VA part, you can't make reference unless you're part of that.
Sorry, what page was it on?
That's the first page of your enrollment agreement at the very bottom. It's in the block allowable tuition discount.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's just there. Sorry, I'm just trying to go through. I didn't have it. Under the catalog on page 9, I just, maybe I'm missing it, but 14C is just all publications and the page number which the student grievance policy is published. And although you reference it on page 9 of the catalog, I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you don't see what?
you go to the catalog checklist.
I'm on page 9.
Yeah, but hold, first of all, the catalog checklist, item 14, number C, says, list all publication and page numbers in which the student grievance procedure is published. You reference it on page 8 of your catalog, or in the page 9 of your catalog, and it's item 14, A, B, and C. You reference all those, but I do not see C there. I don't see it listed where you have this.
I'm not following you on that.
Okay, part of the catalog checklist. What am I missing?
Oh, no.
Item C.
Yeah, if there, we're just saying, please tell us where every place that you have this posted.
Where do they tell you that? I don't have any knowledge to know where it's posted. It's
well, if it would be on other places and other materials.
Well, then I would make a comment that we should strike that out of the catalog checklist if you don't want it. It doesn't not required in the catalog.
Okay.
So. What's in
the It isn't. Where you don't you see where you said list where it's listed in other publications? It's not listed.
If it's in the absence of the mentioning in the application,
well, it's not. That's it. It's not posted. All right. I had to tell them something. I guess I'm wrong. Okay, so I had to get that out of there. You did have the high school diploma, associate bachelor's degree may be required for gainful employment. You've added that, so.
Can we just stop for a minute on that one? So we've got to talk to
you. Yeah, please go.
You have been before this board for this application, I'm pretty sure more than anybody. And this application is way, way better than the other versions that have come through.
I said, I wonder why. How that,
but I am still so stuck on admissions refinement is very, very low, seventh grade aptitude, essentially. But to get a job in the field, you have to have a bachelor's degree. So I feel that that is very misrepresenting. The salaries that you list. Could someone really, with a seventh grade education, seventh grade aptitude, are they going to be able to take your course and go and take $30,000? And we are a consumer protection agency, so of everything else that you've corrected, and I don't have four yellow tabs this time as opposed to tabs, so that is a big deal. But I really, really feel like you are like grossly misleading students with that statement. I can't understand what your intention is of doing that.
Which statement?
No, he admits them with a seventh grade aptitude, but to get a job, it is highly likely they have to have a bachelor's degree. So I think that's very just so unfair and misleading to a consumer who may think, well, I'm a really, you know, good person. I have seventh grade aptitude. I'm going to go to this school and I'm going to make all this money. Then I go to get find a job and you can't get a job. And everyone who goes to school hits the problem when they go to get a job that they're told, oh, it's good you have that education, but where's your experience, right? So we know people already have that. You're throwing in the extra hurdle of, great, you have that education, but you know what? Nobody's going to hire you with only a seventh grade education. So I'm so stuck on that I haven't had a meeting.
It's, thank you for asking that. And this issue keep popping up. And we have to have a reason why it was in originally. Because we have people come in without a high school diploma trying to sign up. That's how this started. Now, very easily, I can go ahead. It takes me 2 minutes to change my prerequisite to all my classes to be high school diploma. That is no problem to do that.
So let me just say that I'm not requiring you to say you have to have a high school diploma, but this is post-secondary, okay? So
right.
Post-secondary is beyond high school.
True.
So back in the day, in the Department of Ed, it allowed people who didn't have a high school diploma or a GED or homeschool, whatever, who had the ability to benefit. They backed up on that, and it's going back and forth, and the bottom line is that you don't have to have them have a high school diploma. However, I strongly feel like to go to college, you have to be beyond the level of understanding of high school. And so there are still ability to benefit tests. They are done by a separate process. This is not you taking the test, you know, administering the test.
So if you don't want to have high school diploma as a requirement, if you say that high school diploma or equivalent is preferred or the ability benefit as demonstrated by, and then use one of the industry accepted tests, and then I would be comfortable.
But just to play devil's advocate, you know the pathway on that. I mean, the path of diploma, those ATB tests are seventh grade level. So we're not getting anywhere far.
Right,
if you're
but,
looking
but,
to
but
get
not,
higher, you know.
But it is an industry thing.
Not as, not as obscure as saying seventh grade. So they do the Wonderlic based on the seventh grade. It's a little more concrete as far as the accept. I guess the reason, you said you did this because you're getting people coming in without a high school education.
Sure.
Are you still participating in the Workforce Investment Act dollars?
Pending this license.
We cannot
do that unless
I would imagine you have people coming with those benefits too that don't have a high school.
Exactly
right.
And that's how this started.
Yeah.
Now, it's very easy for me to go ahead and say high school diploma or equivalent to it required for all my classes. Now, but we have to remember, there's jobs that don't require a high school diploma as an IT, as a help desk support. Amazon just hired here in Arizona about 500 people, and part of the job announcement had no high school in it. But they hired them as a help desk support people. And I do testing for Amazon. So this is a fact. So there is jobs that do not require high school diploma.
At the salary level that you're listing here?
Well, they go by the position. If you're a help desk support, you make $13 an hour. I'm just throwing this out, $13.99. That's pretty prevalent. And there's no high school requirement. But I have to go through regulatory licensing, and I don't want this issue to come up. I take your advice to make it easier for me and to be consistent. You're absolutely correct, and I agree with you. Post-secondary education should be past high school, or at least high school as a minimum. I agree with you 100%, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
So you may want to base it off some kind of testing standard that, and you level it at a seventh grade level, like you're saying, or an eighth grade, whatever you think is apropos, but I would definitely base it off the testing standard.
So
not administered by you, it would be
or equivalent. High school diploma equivalent or the ability benefit as evidenced by testing of whichever test you choose to do.
Absolutely.
Well, he has the AIMS,
I understand the AIMS thing, went looked up, but still it's got administered by you. It would not make me feel comfortable to license a college.
Well, no.
I have a couple of others. We often talk here on the board about putting things in your catalog, your enrollment agreement, that people are going to misunderstand. So you have a bullet of your objective, and it is a lofty objective, I have to say, to emphasize mastery of essential skills related to the ability to survive on a daily basis.
That needs to come out.
Wow, yeah, really does.
The way you said it is just... Absolutely, I'm with you. I'm sorry, what page is that on?
It's on page 2. It is the last bullet of your objective. I know. I was actually thinking, I have 20-something children. I'd be happy to make sure they have built everything here to be able to survive, but I just don't think you can do it with
okay.
children. Okay.
Absolutely right.
All right. The next one. That was the seventh grade thing. All right. Answer that. Page 5. Tuition financing policy. And there's not especially wrong with this per se, other than a little worried about seeing you in front of the complaint committee, and nothing personal, but we really don't want to see you in front of the complaint committee. Computer Learning Center can assist you in securing a student loan for your school expenses. I believe that many, if not most, students would take that as a promise, that you are absolutely positively going to get them a loan, and therefore, someone who doesn't get a loan is going to be coming before the board saying, he said he can assist in securing. That is a positive statement. You are getting them a loan. So is it 100% guaranteed that anyone who comes to your school is going to get them?
No.
Okay, then you need to change that statement.
So take the statement out or modify?
You can reword it saying that you would
provide help?
You would assist them in applying.
Would it be accurate?
Not in securing, but in applying. Okay, that makes sense.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter what the relationship is versus, like, have they established a relationship with a bank that...
Yeah, the sole subvention is what is an end.
Can you give them a referral of
issues they don't apply as
I was just referring earlier to the other school who had a relationship with a bank.
But he does, he's clearly saying
that. Clearly states it does.
The system seeking.
You know, maybe you should just say that they are encouraged to to seek additional financing, but
that's
what I said. Yeah. It's not really the student to seek
further financing.
Okay. All
the rest of them still really seventh grade, so you get out of three tabs by answering that other question.
Okay.
And then I have any questions for them?
Mr. David, I haven't had the benefit of some of these previous months' discussions. Help me understand why you object to the $1,600 fee.
Oh, I read it. It's in the regulatory requirement, and it's not a staff thing. It's a regulatory requirement. When I showed up to turn in my application, I was 2 days late. I realized I was 2 days late. Rachel, good enough, she let me know that it was the application is 2 days late and you need to pay $100 a day. And so I paid my initial fee, which is $600 for my school, for my budget, the $600 renewal fee, and I paid $200 late fee. And then right then, Rachel realized, she looked at it, she goes, oh, this is not a renewal application form, this is an original application form. So you need to give us a renewal form, which is a different form. And right then I didn't have that with me, and I says, okay, I'll work on that and give it and bring it back to you. And there was financial summaries and other stuff I hadn't completed yet. I needed to do that. And while I was doing that, I figured I'll just give the board or the staff the new application with the renewal fee and the financial summary is a complete thing. And it took me 2 weeks to do that, to give them that. Now, at no time between the date I turned in my initial application and the day I got an email from Terry, Mrs. Sankfield, saying, oh, you owe us $1,600 because you were late. It's $100 a day, and it's been 14 days. I'm like, well, I didn't realize that there was a counter. Every day that I wasn't turning in that form, that particular form, renewal form, I was charged $100. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. And now, if I was... You're an educator.
I'm sorry?
You're an educator.
Yes, sir.
I go to your school, and yes, my term paper is due on Friday.
Right.
And on Friday, I give you a book report on a book I read that has nothing to do with the education. You're not going to accept that. I then say, okay, a couple of days later, I bring you the cover page with nothing. And I say, well, here's my intent to meet that obligation, and I give you the cover page. You still haven't done it. So I understand that you have a different opinion, but the way the statute is written is, and you were in business and licensed before,
mm-hmm.
and then we went through all of this to get your application to a point that was allowable now. And so I believe that you, more than many others, should have understood what the requirements were, and even not up how you perhaps understood that, the idea of you thinking it's okay to submit inadequate, incomplete, insufficient information and not have the board declare that to be not substantially complete enough to not charge you a late fee. So I just want to put out there that is my opinion. Having gone through, literally, it took me like 8 hours the last time you were before the board. I have not had to spend 8 hours on anybody's application, and they have been on this board since 07. I literally had to spread out on a huge table trying to make heads or tails of what you submitted last time. So I have to say unequivocally that the application you submitted, and that wasn't even the first application you submitted, you still improved it, that was still not complete and not good enough to pass this board. And we could have, and we considered, completely rejecting your application then, and we decided to give you another chance. So basically, I think that that fee is the fee that you paid to not have your application denied based on what you gave us last time. So that's just my opinion.
Okay, I need to add something to your question. And I talked to my staff also about this. If my application was not the correct application at the time I turned it in, I could have been told right then, I'm not going to charge you late fee. This is wrong. What you are turning to me is wrong, and I'm not going to accept it. But I was charged $200 late fee that day. To me, that gave me the impression that, okay, I'm late 2 days. I just need to go back and get that form, the right form, and bring it back.
That's the person you handed into is not doing a complete evaluation to see if it's complete.
I understand that. But why was I charged 2 days late fees?
You're being charged $1,600, which is $200 you already paid, and $1,400. And I guess you could say why you believe that it's not valid. I genuinely, sincerely believe that you're getting a good deal at $1,600. But does anyone else have any comments they would like to make?
Just the larger scope of this, we talked about this last time. It's not their job to tell you. You're supposed to read the rates and understand, and it clearly says you're going to be charged, you know, on late stuff like that. So, I mean, they're there for clarification, but it is incumbent upon the school management and the applicant to understand what the rates are and understand it. And you've been around a while, and it's not just a stunt. You've been in business, so it seems like that. So, to me, I don't know. I wouldn't, if it was me, this personal advice to you, I wouldn't get so caught up with the fee. I'd pay it and move on. But that's me. You know, I mean, you'll do what you want to do at the end of the day.
And remember that all of this is showing whether you are administratively capable to run the school, and your previous application did not display that. But your current one gives us more hope that is the case. That you will be able to follow the rules and run your school. So we are not going to be following behind you. Everything comes up and saying, did you know about that rule? It is coming from you.
I agree. I agree with the rule. I never did say it was wrong or I'm going against the rule. The only hang-up I have is I was charged $200 for 2 days late. I shouldn't have been charged for that. I should have said, this is the wrong form, George. I work 10 minutes away from here. I could have gone back and filled out the right form and brought it back. The reason I didn't do that...
It was not just that, sir, it was not the form, right? It was the entire packet. So we're going to have to agree to disagree here. We are not complaining that you used the wrong form. Well, we are, but in addition to the wrong form, the requirements to renew the application were substantially different than what you submitted, so you essentially gave a blank term paper and hoped that it would
notice. I beg to differ with you. I'm sorry, but I have to say this. If you look at the original application versus the renewal application, which I did repeatedly because this came up, there is 16 items in the original application. There's only 8 items to be turned in for the renewal. I turned in 16 items.
Sir, you know what?
Okay.
That is still the same as you gave
us. So it's not a blank paper.
Report, not something
else. Okay.
We're not going to have a closed session on this. Thank you.
The board is not required to notify licensees when the renewal is due. However, out of courtesy, we always have.
True.
So he has noticed 4 months in advance by email and told in the email that the license renewal and its forms are on the website because we update them by fourth. So he's given 60 days to get it to us, and we're given 60 days to process. So the original app was one that he just pulled out of the file. From the old file, I guess, instead of
without updating.
Instead of paying attention to the renewal itself. And like you said, Mr. David has been licensed for many years. I don't know why it was so difficult.
But again, it is what it is. Statutorily, that's how it's stated. So.
Now, I paid $200.
Right, that's why. Do you understand that $200, you could say I paid $200, I don't understand why I was charged $1,600. Well, you were 16 days late. So what your penalty is really $1,400 plus the $200, which you've already paid. So that totals $1,600.
Right.
That's all I did.
I also was looking at the calendar again, and if I could, it was due on the 1st. So since it didn't come in the 1st, we don't charge on that day. So we start counting on the 2nd. He brought it in on the 19th. So that would be 14 days late. He's paid two. So it should be
$1,200. That's it.
$1,200 minus the New Year's days, but this time he owes $1,000.
It was 14 total.
Yeah.
Minus the $200. And I have no problem paying the $1,200.
Yeah.
So move.
Can I share a page with the board before we move on, please?
This is the letter that Terry sent to us
to get renewals. I want you to pay attention to the first paragraph. Underline. I'm sorry, I don't have enough copies.
That was sent out to all the schools for the renewal.
No, this is additional to regular.
And that's what I'm doing.
I know. Then this was sent to you separately than the email.
I understand that, but look at the date on that thing. What does it do? What is it saying? It's the wrong date, doesn't it? Okay.
Okay, so you know what, sir?
I'm not saying this could happen.
Hang on. Mm-hmm. She has one typo in this letter. If you would like to know, go page by page with everything that I marked up in your application,
right.
I'm not going to bore the crowd by doing it, okay?
I'm not saying that. I'm not blaming Terry for that. It could happen.
You had a lot. So we're not holding you accountable for having one typo in your application.
Okay.
And I say you're kind of going downhill here. I was feeling really good about the condition of your application and your ability to follow rules. I'm now going back to being really worried that every single rule that comes up, you're going to be looking for, you know, an alternate application of how that is going to be applied.
I'm paying extra attention to what comes out.
If I could think the future, I would say that unfortunately we're going to be seeing you again, not in a good way. So.
Thank you. Can I shift gears a little bit since you acknowledge that you're going to pay the $1,200? Is this in your application that there are no current liabilities? And I know that you have an accountant who works with you.
Yes.
So could you address your accountant? I would strongly doubt that you have no current liabilities, and so therefore you end up with a current ratio of zero, mm-hmm. which doesn't work either. So just for the accuracy of your application, but also I would say for your accounting records, you need to go back and ask your accountant to figure out what are your current liabilities. So for example, if you have, I'm looking at the January through December 2016 income statement. And so you list that you have income from test fees and from tuition, right?
What year are you looking at?
2016.
Okay.
January through December, through the year, right?
Okay.
So for some of, so let's just say the tuition, right? Then it's $28,300 for class fee hard skill, right? Mm-hmm. On December 31st, are there any of those students who paid tuition to your school, are any of them still enrolled?
Okay, this was January through December 2016.
Right.
So that's the income that came in the 12 months.
Right. And so let's say I'm a student in your class.
Mm-hmm.
It's December, right?
December of what year?
Of 2016.
Okay, the last month of this statement.
The last month of this statement.
Okay.
And I'm still enrolled in your program, right?
Right.
You have students like me mm-hmm. who are still students in January, right?
Yes.
and I may have paid my tuition in December,
mm-hmm.
right, for classes that begin in January, right?
Well, no, the sign up for a program, you pay up front for the whole thing.
And did it end on December 31st?
The classes didn't, but the payment was made already.
So that's the revenue, right?
Exactly right.
So that's the $28,300.
Right.
But, so I paid in advance, and so...
Some of the services are not rendered yet.
Are not rendered yet.
Correct.
That's your liability.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, now I'm not saying, because you're still, your net income is, you're profitable. I'm not questioning that, but just in terms of whether... You know, you have to submit either to this board or to the Department of Education or to whomever. It's inaccurate to say that you have no current liability because you're liable to teach me. Let's say the class ends in March. That's a liability for you. So your accountant just needs to figure
that
out.
To be factual, we do not have any money going from December to January. We do not have anyone that took classes or taking classes are going into and taking January classes. That's a fact.
Not one.
I think you said something a little different earlier. So nobody paid you in December for classes starting in January, and nobody who had paid you at any time in 2016 was still in school. Everybody, you're starting with zero. No students yet.
We're starting with zero right now.
And you haven't accepted any income for anybody in 2016 who's starting in 2017.
No, ma'am. We have not.
Right?
Because we're pending this renewal. That's why we're not taking any new.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I have to structure my motion because there's two. We're considering two things today. First, the conditional to regular vocational license renewal, and then a supplemental license application for new programs. What?
I know.
Okay. So I'm going to go with item one first, which is the conditional to regular vocational program license. I make a motion that we grant Peter Learning Center the regular vocational program license with the following stipulations. Complete the edits to the catalog that were noted by Ms. Leonard and submit to staff. Maintain a $15,000 surety bond, pay the additional $1,200 late fee, and I guess we don't have to go back for liabilities, right? No, we decided there wasn't any. Okay. So those three stipulations.
Agreed.
Second motion.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. I do agree to those stipulations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Regarding number two, supplemental license application for new program foreign language translation, I made a motion that we deny this application. It's materially incomplete and unfocused. If this is something we want to do, I told you what you probably need to do to make it passable. So.
Would you amend your motion to say defer action?
Defer.
Defer, and he can resubmit if so wishes.
If he denies, he can resubmit too.
Well, that triggers another fee.
What?
That would trigger another charge.
$700. Oh, okay.
Five.
I feel like you owe me that for as much as you do that, I would amend my motion to defer that. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, got a motion second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Good luck.
Question?
Yes, sir. The $1,200. We haven't done any business lately. Can we break it down and do some sort of... I can work it out with Barry about that, but taking $1,200 out at 1 month.
I don't know how that works statutorily. I would ask that you, deal with the staff on that.
They have...
We have the capability. I'm told we do have the capability.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
I hope I'll have to see you again.
Oh, I can see you for a while. I enjoyed you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care.
Ms. Campbell, has the board folks come in?
Yes.
Terry, I'll send you everything.
Okay.
Thanks.
Do you want a break?
You tell me to do, Madam Chairman, I do.
Well, what if we decide to show up?
Well, we're all around. I guess we see what we
are. Sorry about that.
Good night. I'm just brushing the truck. I already got all the
dough. I thought I'd need a little bit of more time. You made me sprint down the parking lot if that makes you feel any better. I normally don't do that. I avoid that stuff.
So we're now going to discuss Accord Healthcare and Ms. Jento.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your October 2015 meeting, the board approved the conditions of cancer program license for Accord Healthcare with the stipulations that they maintain the $15,000 surety bond and there were revisions to the admission policy. Court also offers the CNA program, which is under the Board of Nursing and not under our jurisdiction.
It's not even in the catalog at all. That's what kind of throws me.
I know. And they are now seeking to go from their conditional to regular location. And you are important, Mr. Barr.
Would you like to say your name, please?
My name is Guillermo Lopez. I am the lobotomy program director at our Accord Healthcare Institute.
Who's your campus president? Who runs your school?
Dr. Lopez.
Where's Dr. Lopez?
Harris.
Hi, sir.
Where?
Harris.
Harris?
John Petty.
We wish we were here.
I don't think he was enjoying that. He was with some cadavers.
All right, then.
Not the problem with dead people. Sometimes they're engaging in... Yeah, you want to make a statement, sir? I'm getting loopy. You want to make a statement? How you doing?
We're doing good.
Population.
Right now, we're actually... at the beginning of the year, the last year, when we got the provisional license, we wanted to test out the phlebotomy program, so we were not really focused on getting like this massive amount of students. We wanted to get a small amount of students that if we had to make any changes to the program, that we can accommodate and change it to a smaller group than trying to get a bunch of students and possibly find any kind of problem, because it was a new program. And we did that, and we did find some kind of issues with it, because originally the program was built in order for the patient care technician program, the phlebotomy one especially. But we really found the students did not want to go through the patient care technician program. They were just taking the phlebotomy program and then getting out, which the problem we found in that is that there was really no internship. And as far as being employable, we felt that that was in the best interest of the student. So what we did is we submitted a change to the program, which is we took out the requirements for the patient care technician classes, which is the first two classes, and then provided the students with externship class or portion of the program. We actually grabbed all students and offered them if they wanted to do some externship, and the ones that were not hired did go through it, and we got them externship as an optional. It wasn't really a requirement because you know it wasn't part of the original contract that we made with them, but we gave them as an option, and they did do 120 hours of externship, and actually I think pretty much every single one of them got hired.
Yeah, because that's the problem. We see a lot of people that will get into the phlebotomy world, the EKG world, and stuff like that, and they take people off the streets. And without combination of some other type of medical specialty, a practitioner, or an extensive, an externship, you find that they're not employable. It's like an adjunct skill to make you better.
Well, phlebotomy in itself is a good profession.
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
And it is really marketable right now. If you look at Sonora Quest, I mean, Toronto.
No, I'm well aware of that. But back to my original question, yeah. What's your population?
Well, our population right now, we've got 20 students in the phlebotomy program, and our CNA population is still pretty strong.
How about your EKG?
The EKG, we have not started that class yet.
Okay.
And I don't have enough instructors. So I don't want to offer a class that I'm going to be trying to take, make another hole to cover once.
We very much appreciate that.
And we appreciate the people getting a little practice before they start trying to take my letter.
They do have to get 75 sticks before they leave.
Yeah. Okay. Well, your application was good. You know, I don't have that many. Although I see my button over here has a little bit of stickies, and I'll go through my questions first. Since I'm lead on this one. Going to the enrollment agreement, please, page 2. Excuse me, page 1 of 4. Excuse me, page 1 of 4. Sorry, here's the cover sheet.
No, I don't think I've read it. I dumped all my papers when I came here running.
Take note at least.
I did all the enrollment, so.
Take note.
Yeah, I did have
a. Okay. Middle of page tuition, registration fee. It says $200 non-refundable. That's not true because our 3-day cancel rule, and it goes on in the catalog to say, you know, if you cancel within 3 days, all money's paid back. So that you need to strike out non-refundable or quantify it, you know, to say.
Well, it says that all monies will be returned if the student doesn't start the program and so forth, but after the student started the program,
it's not indicated, because then why do you go down below it?
I get you.
The fee below it for LAPI is not refundable for 1 week. So this all you have to add there, if you don't want to take out non-refundable, just after 3 days, you know. I wouldn't even mess with putting non-refundable there myself. But, I have a question about the $150 for the NCCT. I assume that's refundable if they don't take it, because you do reference it as being refundable later on.
That is actually part of the thing that we ask the students to do that. And if the student pays for it, is there. If the student doesn't take the test, and if the service wasn't rendered, then we will return. That's like not taking the class. You know, you don't have to pay for it.
Agreed, but I'll take fellow board members' feedback. But shouldn't that say refundable?
The 920 is going to be subject to the percentage. The 150 is fully refundable, and we do say elsewhere about it being fully refundable. So here, you know, you have that little mark about the registration fee. This exam fee is refundable prior to taking the test.
Okay. Yeah, it just contradicts what's in there and stuff like that. Congratulations for having the shortest enrollment agreement today. It's still a lot longer than we used to, but we'll take it. What's the question I had about the discounts if they've taken have they taken previous AHI classes? Can you explain that to me?
How it works is this. If the student has taken a class previously with us, like for example, let's say I started a pathology program and a deep pathology for 1, right? And for AOB reason, I came back, I dropped out, and I'm no longer in the program. If you came back, I'm not going to charge you yet again for you to do the whole program. If you already took one class from that requirement, why would I charge you again and make you take that class again? Now, it has a 3-year, I think it might be a 3-year or 5-year.
It's 3 years.
It's 3 years that the person has that those classes are valid, but we just don't feel that your skills will be retained after you've taken the phlebotomy class, like part 1, for example, and you haven't taken that class in 3 years. So in that scenario, like they say, if you come back 2 years later, you only have to take phlebotomy 2 and only pay for that class. That's what would be the explanation for.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was a little awkward. Did you read that so far?
Is the language a little confusing?
Yeah, it's all right. If I come back across it. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Just want to confirm that you're only taking 18-year-olds or above?
Yes. Except for the CNA. Those are 16, but that's the CNA regulations, which is by the original board nursing.
Why do you cite 18, if I may ask?
Mainly just because they can consent, and since we do blood draws, I would have to have the guardian sign off on every kind of procedure they would do. So as far as legality, I thought it would be better.
Okay. Just got to abide by it. So somebody, like for instance, my daughter finished high school when she was 17, early in her 17, and she couldn't come to your school, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we haven't had that.
What?
He would take me.
Yeah, exactly. But that's your call. You want to restrict it, and you can restrict it.
We mainly went just because of the consent.
Right below that, I had a question for being able to read, speak, and understand English. You talk about what substantively the ATB test, ability to benefit test, here, the Wonderlic, but I don't see anywhere who's giving that.
Wonderlic, the company itself. We have the test out here, but that's only for people that don't graduate from high school.
No, I understand that. The Wonderlic doesn't give it. There's proctors. Do you have a third-party proctor that comes in?
No, they just take a test on the computer. We haven't had somebody that had that situation yet, but...
they don't have that. I don't understand.
As far as we understand, we haven't had a person that we have to give the Wonderlic to yet. And they have a high school diploma that was here in the United States, or a GED that was in the United States. Then the English should be sufficient enough for our course. So the Wonderlic test, as far as we understand, it's just given in a computer test where the person sits down.
Well, there's different Wonderlics. That's why I'm confused. A lot of people use the SLE, standard level scholastic.
I think that's what we use. I'm not 100% sure on that.
And that one, the school can administer. There's nobody in the admissions process here.
Yeah.
What you list here, the quantitative and the verbal, is the ATB is a whole separate test. Usually, quantitatively, you have to have a third-party administrator that comes in and gives this test to keep it. So you have test integrity. So, I'm not going to hold you up today on that, but as a stipulation, I'd like you to report back to the board.
We did come to the Wonderlic, and as far as that, we understood that we could administer the test on campus without a third party. That's only somebody like make sure that the person...
Proctor.
Yeah, the one of our employees, proctor, the principal, that took the test, and it was fine. I might be wrong on that one, but I'll check and I'll inform you guys at that point.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
You have provided a copy of high school diploma or GED, which means that you want them to be a high school graduate, and you want them to give you a copy. You might want to just say be a high school graduate or the equivalent or provide evidence. I guess the wording, I'm worried about the homeschool students, like to make sure that your wording isn't tying them down. Are you guys okay with that? Okay, that's the wording. You said provide a copy of the high school diploma or GED.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
That generally, yeah. I mean,
yeah. Maybe you just put our equivalent just to make sure that like this whole thing about is a both homeschool diploma, really high school diploma, or the equivalent of high school diploma. So just to cover yourself, you might
that's a good idea.
Or equivalent.
And there's some things that you just don't use GED anymore.
That's changed.
Cover yourself by saying equivalent.
Here's a question here before we switch pages.
We always get a little. Confused wraps on schools that are giving tests and whether they're considered certified or something based on tests they're giving. And you just saw that the NCAA accredited certifying program used by AHI is the National Center for Competency. AHI is an approved NCC testing site, which means students will be able to provide their coursework by taking the appropriate certifying exam at AHI. Is that an issue that they're taking the test at the same at the school?
It's not. That's coming back.
Yeah, we get a proctor that comes. That one we do have a proctor that comes into campus. We can't even go into the room; they're gonna take over.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they don't let us in there anymore. Unless they have an IT problem, then they kick everybody out. Somebody has to fix the IT problem, and then they can keep testing. The board of nursing does the same thing.
Okay. I'm trying to be sure, but sometimes people may,
We don't proctor that test, though.
Okay.
On the next page of the tab, on page 9, so we're still under admission, so I just want to make sure this is correct. I do understand to get an inpatient care tech, you have to be a nursing assistant already, get that.
Yeah.
But if you have proof of certification in EKG and phlebotomy, so are you saying you're not taking anybody unless they have individual certifications in those two things?
Yes.
So what are you teaching in the course?
Well, the patient care technician is more like advanced nursing.
I know what it is, but they sometimes include those, so, okay.
There's not really much of phlebotomy. It's mainly about, catheter care, wound care, the sterile procedures and so forth.
And why are you requiring these?
essentially make the students more employable. Plan to be working in multiple areas. The patient care technician that we designed wasn't really meant to be kind of like, some people call a patient care technician somebody that has a CNA in the phlebotomy. Right, and they'll call them a patient care, because it's really just a title, it's like a medical assistant.
Right, it's not regulated by any board, I'm well versed in this. So I'm just wondering, so if I come to your school, I can have taken EKG and phlebotomy anywhere I want.
Exactly. As long as you're certified.
I'm just making sure you're not racketeering them through your school.
Well, that's why I said that. So if you have the credentials of CNA, EKG technician, and phlebotomy from somewhere else, and you just wanted to get the EKG program done, you can. The advantage of taking the PCT program there, if you have those students, then you can also be certified by the national board.
Okay.
It does not apply to your three-year question. Is there re-enrollment into a previously begun program? You're saying a student may re-enroll in a previously begun program after a period of non-attendance of up to 6 months. And then courses successfully completed within a five-year time limit will have to be repeated. But then on page 16, you say that if they haven't taken it within 3 years, then they have to be taken. So you have a little conflict of timing here. Is it just that they took it at your school, 5 years is okay, but somewhere else it's 3 years?
I'll have to review that one.
If you would, so just make sure that...
That might be a typo of some sort, so maybe we need to change
that's
that.
On page 9. Are they allowed to have a 75% attendance in externship, or do they have 100%?
They have to be 120 hours. So it has to be completely 100%.
Then in your attendance policy, you just say students are required to attend a minimum of 75% of the total hours of each course, and externship is essentially a course, so that is a conflict. So if you just...
So I would have to make an exception or except for
externship or the course.
With the exception of externship, which are 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I don't have anything further. Madam Chair? Prepare for a motion. I make a motion that we grant the conditional to regular vocational program licensure application for a courthouse with the following stipulations: that you maintain the $15,000 surety bond and you make the edits to the
We have a motion. Do you have a second?
Second.
Any other comments? All right. All those in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Well, actually, do you agree to the stipulation?
I do.
All right. Anyone opposed? All right. Blessings are granted, and you're worth waiting for. Welcome to that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Make them all drop it.
We'll get that KLF.
You were able to speak to us.
If I could turn it out, you know what's going on.
What's the
catalog? Four times. No, if I'm not going to review, because I already did a catalog for this year, we'll have to put like version 2 in it. As far as I know, what's our original version for about
you can change the specifics on each page. As long as the page number and structure didn't change, you can just send us the page that has the new information on it.
As far as some of my students already have the old version.
You
can do an addendum then?
Addendum to it, and I don't have to put like version 2 or anything like that to it.
Just make sure next print.
Make sure that I'm going to take it down from your website, that the catalog and the addendum are very clearly.
Alright. Thank you.
What does he do with the, we're still discussing so if he does the revision and does it, what do you need to do with version 2, and then does he just do an announcement?
Or you could just say updated on a certain date. Do you have them pre-printed?
We print them, yeah. We give them to the students when they come in.
You print so out, you have a bunch already.
I don't have a bunch of them. I think I have about like 3 or 4 that are like laying around. Mm-hmm.
I guess my suggestion would be that
you just redo it, update it with an updated date. Then when you send it to us, highlight the areas that you got us.
And on those three or four that you have hanging around, put them down.
I'll just reprint all
of them. Now you're listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. All right, the next one. The provisional degree granting license renewal application for unmanned vehicle university is Dr. Mittman and me. Fine, but you guys have
I'm John Miner. I'm the provost of the university.
Okay. Would you care to make an opening statement?
Sure. First of all, President Kevin Kelly apologizes he couldn't be here. He normally is, but he's on travel to other parts of the world right now, so he's happy to be here. We feel like we're doing real well. We've been profitable the first 2 years out of purchasing the university from the previous owner. We are on our way this year towards accreditation. We submitted our application to DEAC last week. We have all of the funds available necessary to be able to go through the entire accreditation process. We are also looking at potentially getting some new facilities in downtown Phoenix. We have an office in the Cityscape building. We also have a separate office out at the Goodyear Airport, and we're looking at combining the university and then part of another business, Stampede, that we have a partnership. They sell drones, and then we provide the training for the drones. And that should be somewhere towards the middle or the last half of 2017 that we'd be getting those facilities. So we'll be asking for a license to be able to operate out of there as well. In terms of our marketing, what we have done mostly is gone to a lot of trade shows and a lot of industry shows where they would use unmanned vehicles. And we've offered short courses, small short courses ranging from an hour to 2 hours, to let them know the specifics of the kinds of things that they can do if they have the proper training and education. We also get a lot of press through magazines that are related to unmanned systems. There's a website that rates schools for different types of education they provide, and we're consistently rated in the top 20 of universities that offer unmanned systems education. Embry-Riddle is one of the ones that's near the top, and we're usually compared to them, but obviously since we're not accredited, we fall a little bit below that. But the recent edition of Rotor Drone magazine that just came out did a two-page spread on us right behind Embry-Riddle University. So we feel like we're getting good marketing there, and mostly for free. We submit articles as well on different topics related to the unmanned industry to these various articles. A lot of 2016 we've spent working on our processes to make sure that they're DEAC compliant. We wanted to make sure we had our ducks in order before we submitted our application.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mine will be fairly quick, and I'll just throw over to you. So, a couple of points. I just want to say that, as you mentioned, you have a strong balance sheet, good current ratio, and positive cash flow. You mentioned the submission to DEAC, and you have an upcoming self study that is.
They're working on the
CERA. Yeah,
we've
been
working on it. It's been 60 days, but we've been working on it obviously already.
Okay. And you feel like you're on track?
Yes, sir.
On track to that. Okay. And then you have instructors, but do you have faculty? You mentioned in the, you wrote that there were no faculty.
The majority of our faculty are adjunct faculty. What we do is we go out and we hire professors that are experts in their particular area of the industry. And we do have, I'm a faculty member. I teach three courses at the university myself, and then a couple of my other deans teach courses as well. Dr. Jameson teaches a course on research methods. We've got the dean of unmanned technology teaches a couple of courses in areas where he's an expert in. But the majority of our faculty is adjunct faculty.
Okay. I'm not sure technically how that can be reported, but I think it behooves you to emphasize the number of faculty that you do have so that when you're comparing expenses, or when expenses are reported on, for example, on your audit, those would all be considered program expenses. So even part of your salaries as faculty members are part of the programmatic delivery as opposed to just general administration. So it's better for the university.
Sure, yes, sir. I understand.
Okay. And then there were refunds, but there were no drops or fails?
There were no failures. We've had several graduates in the certificate program area and in the master's degree program area. In the doctoral area, we've had no graduates yet, but we've got a couple of students that are getting pretty close to defending their VITA. But we've had no failures at all.
And no drops?
No drops. We've got one student that's on a
leave of absence,
right. And that was for personal reasons that we evaluated and approved.
Great. So my last question, I'm a little bit curious. You had an increase in newly enrolled students year over year, I think 126, and yet the revenue decreased year over year from 2015 at $859,000 in 2016 to $657,000. Can you elaborate on that?
We've invested some significant funds in things that would be to the liking of the accreditors, we feel, in order to provide the students with a better experience. Things like an online technical library through Novel and Elsevier's, I think is the name of it. And we've purchased a new student electronic classroom system, a new way of doing the live lectures over the internet. We've invested in things like that, and so there's been more investment going towards that.
I'm referring to the revenue and not the expenses, which we appreciate the investment in the infrastructure.
Oh, okay.
But so the revenue, if you look at in your audited financials ending December 31st, 2015, your total revenue was $823,427,000. And then a year later, with an increase in student enrollment, your income dropped almost about $170,000. I'm just curious as to what you attribute that to. Is it a different kind of people signing up for a different program? There's a certificate as opposed to a degree?
Well, I suspect, now I don't see the financials that closely. The president works with our funding department, but Georgia is back here. She might be able to answer some of those questions. But I suspect what we did, because we were getting a lot of requests for being able to use VA funding, and we are waiting to get accredited so that we can apply for federal funding, what we did to try to offset that and show that we support our veterans was offer a 50% tuition discount. And we've had a lot of students coming in under that reduced tuition. And I imagine that's a large contributor to it.
So you don't take them at that from a bookkeeper and from a record and write it off as an expense. That's an expense, actually.
Well, it's a tuition discount that should be just under the revenue.
It should be under the revenue.
Yeah.
My guess, without knowing anything, is you probably have more certificate people than you did last year and more degree-seeking students the year before.
Right.
That's
correct.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, that's the simple answer for that.
That's the truth. The majority of the students that we have going through are on the certificate program. I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
It wasn't one of the questions, why do they have refunds? What has it gone?
That was a question that I had earlier. I guess, are people just dropping a course, but they're still enrolled? The question that Ms. Leonard sent out was what I was asking earlier. There's no drops, there's no fails, but there's refunds for a significant amount of money, about 5% of your total tuition. So are they just...
You know, I'll have to get back to you on that. I can't answer that question today.
And I guess just on the, if you're giving scholarships to veterans, then it behooves you to accurately reflect that.
So you should throw your finance person on the
It should be accurately reflected because it, because A, the university would have higher revenues. B, you know, your audited statements are what you're going to submit to various entities, and it demonstrates good citizenship.
Yeah, I would say too, if it's not a contractor, once you get accredited, charging disproportionate tuition without a hard contract or MOA under is that you'd be in front of us and a lot of other people. So what is all right to do is you listen to the full tuition, and you can do a scholarship below, an institutional scholarship to reduce that. But you can't, without a hard contract in place, you can't take them at a lower tuition amount. With most national accreditors, I'm not quite sure from the HLC perspective. So I hope that makes sense, finance booker. You hear what I'm saying?
Okay, I appreciate that. We'll look into doing that. The situation was under the previous owner, he had just gotten VA funding, and then when he passed away and the university was dormant for a period of months, they pulled the VA funding away.
Some of them are just typos, so we won't have to discuss them here. I'll just give her a chance. One question is, in the catalog, is the enrollment agreement actually just there in the middle of the catalog? It appears to be?
It's part of the enrollment process. The student gets a copy of that.
Right, but it appears to be. One difficult thing is that your catalog does not have pages numbered, and your table of contents do have page numbers, but the actual catalog did not have numbers, and the enrollment agreement appears to be just flow. It's not like a standalone document here. It's literally just something else, and then the EA starts. That is leaving and confusing.
Okay. Take a look at that and fix that.
So I think that if you have any policies in the enrollment agreement that are not elsewhere in the catalog, you should have them elsewhere. And then you certainly can have the enrollment agreement as an addendum to your catalog, so anyone who's inquiring about your school has an opportunity to see it. That would be fine. But it was very confusing that you're going along, it's discussing something else, and it hits the enrollment agreement, and you're asking them to sign it. And the same thing with the refund policy. Within your catalog, you're asking them to sign that they understand the refund policy. And it also thinking flows some of the topic, and then it hits the refund policy, and then they're asked to sign in the middle of it. And not only is your catalog not page dot numbered, but the enrollment agreement doesn't have page this or that of the enrollment agreement. Mm-hmm. And when they're signing it, it should be very clear when they're signing that the document that this signature is encompassing three pages or nine from the earlier
right.
person, whatever it may be.
Now, Carrie, you guys sent me a new enrollment agreement,
and
you renumbered it because we had all that stuff changed.
Yeah. I didn't do that.
So in the renewal document, I took out the old one and put the new one in because the numbering was wrong, and they had the signature page on the wrong page, and there was an additional documents for the signature being on page two, if there was like four more documents. And the new enrollment agreement should be in the institutional file. So I don't know.
But if it was within the catalog, the EA is just...
Maybe we didn't remove it out of the catalog. Do we have a new enrollment agreement? I'm not sure yet.
Would it be best to just remove it out of the catalog, the major portion that included as an addendum?
Look, the enrollment agreement is a separate legal document.
Right. Mm-hmm. We have to sign it separately. Like on the website, they get it separately.
So I don't know why it would be buried in the middle of the catalog.
Okay.
Like I said, if there's any policy that for some reason you're only mentioning it on the EA, make sure you're also including the catalog.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll fix that.
Yeah. And that page number is very, very important.
Okay.
And this is a question that I didn't have a chance to Google and find out. So is it a true statement that you are the only university in the world to teach a course?
No.
Okay. The first statement in your catalog is not accurate.
Right. We were the first university in the world to offer graduate degrees in unmanned systems engineering.
So your catalog says you are the only.
Okay, we need to change that word.
That is, you know, puffery or
that's a whole order from the previous catalog. We should have got that, but I appreciate that. We'll change that for sure.
If they believe it to be true, then it's true. Right?
Not in my opinion. And that is fact. And I can't give you page number, so we have to follow along from here. Well, the page says history. It does say that you are currently the only university in the world.
Okay. We'll search the entire catalog to make sure that we're consistent on that.
And
in Arizona, you can say that.
At this time.
We are the only university in the world that offers a doctorate in unmanned systems.
Just, again, we are on the complaint committee. We really don't like having people come to us and complain to me. And so we don't want people coming and complaining that
we've got
puffery involved.
We will fix
that. We'll turn this back to whatever you want.
Definitely agree that should be fixed.
And in all this licensing, when people come before us and we make suggestions, and you smile and nod and sometimes take notes, pretend you're taking notes, and then we grant you the license, and then you come back, guess what? I'm going to stop it for you. That's really annoying. So you have some things here that we complained about last time that we were under the impression that you were going to fix, and you didn't. So watch for that. Things like what is your structure? It appears you have a quarter calendar, which is perfectly fine. You can be semester grad and have a quarter calendar. However, in a few places in your catalog, you talk about semesters, and you don't have semesters. And that's a really big deal, especially as you're going through to accrediting. Because those phrases mean something, so you can't have an alternative definition for those.
Okay.
So the quarter schedule is lovely, that's accurate, but then in other places it goes up.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Has anybody on your team gone through the accrediting school process before?
I've gone through several accreditations.
With DEAC?
Yeah. Not with DEAC. I've taken their training.
I just want to make sure somebody's going to, because if not, I was going to tell you, seek consultants, because there is a lot of little words and things like that.
When
you're
that.
Unaccredited, yeah. And maybe not a big deal, when you're accredited, huge deal.
And I went through it with the Air Force Test Pilot School when we got them accredited for a master's degree in flight test engineering. We had to.
So you've been through it. I just wanted to make sure somebody, you don't know how often we get people that haven't, and they're trying to go forge ahead on their own.
And a lot of my comments here have to do with the terminology that you're using, and so degree is different than certificate, and you kind of flip back and forth, and it could be that as people were adding things to the catalog, you weren't tuning into the next paragraph, maybe specified degree or specified certificate. So there's a number of places in here that have that. And then under the admissions requirements, they're similar in the three, the master's, doctor, and professional certificate, but a little bit different. And under master's, you have official transcripts and asterisk, and under professional certificate, official transcripts, asterisk. But under doctor, it says official transcripts must come from all previously attended colleges and universities. I don't know why it's worded differently. So again, when you go through crediting, any change in word, we spend all the time saying, what is the difference? Why is that sentence different? What does it mean? What is he trying to tell me? So if you're not trying to tell me anything, then just
I understand. It needs to be clear.
Okay. There are a number of things here on the next page. Again, with the certificate program, you then, in the last sentence, call it a degree, which you can. And then, but in the master's program, you then call it a certificate program. So I think you have a sentence to flip there. But
what
doctorate,
page was that?
I don't know. You didn't know. It's on the application, for the second page of the application process. Underneath the doctorate, there's a little box that kind of recaps the certificate, master's, and doctorate. And then you have a good paragraph that says, students can request transfer credits upon enrollment in the first course of the chosen degree program. So does that mean it applies only to the degree programs and does not apply to the certificate program, or does it apply to all of them?
Could you repeat the first part of that?
Students can request to transfer credits upon enrollment in the first course of the chosen degree program. So can certificate students also ask for transfer credits?
No, it's only in the degree programs.
So if that's a true statement, then that's fine. I just want to make sure that was true, because in other places you could say that.
But the graph right on top of it says you're allowed to transfer in 4 credits into the certificate program.
Yeah, you did. That's complicated. Yeah, so you have a nice little box here that says 4 credits for certificate, 16 for master's, and 32 for doctorate.
Okay, we'll resolve that then and change the language.
Right, so that is the last
thing.
You get 2 stickies on that page.
Excuse me, can I ask a question about that? Because I had a question on that also. So for the doctorate of science degree program, it says you can transfer up to 32 credits. Right? And the program is 60 credits, right? So you can transfer up to half of the credits. Could that be from a master's degree? And what would...
I had thought that it was 4, 8, and 16. So 32 credits, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah,
so
that's 4, 16, 36.
Seems high, and it's more than half of the...
So, yeah.
That'll be rejected by the credit.
Yeah.
Not
yeah, that doesn't that sound right.
You're not teaching them how
to... Maybe engineering or applied science.
Sorry, we have a little sidebar about if you are the only doctorate program in the history of the world, then how can they be transferred?
I'm sure it's some sort of aeronautical engineering or flight.
I think we need snacks now.
Well, I'm a progressing engineer. I'm looking at your shoes now, not looking at mine.
So under the enrollment agreement, which says that the enrollment agreement, cancellation refund policy, you know, in the middle here, we've already talked about that. Under payment method in terms of payment, I feel like you're giving me a choice here. The tuition deposit is either $1,600 or $2,400, and it's either 4 credits or 6 credits. I have no idea what that means. You don't have any idea what you mean?
Well, if they're taking a 4-credit-hour course, it's $400 a credit hour and $1,600. If they're taking a 6-credit-hour course, it's $2,400.
That doesn't say that to me.
It's clear as mud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I'll clear it. The typos, for example, will fill you in.
Would it be possible, or would it be inappropriate to ask to get a copy of your notes so we can make sure we get those exact?
With a qualifying statement that I have handwriting that would make you think that I am the best doctor in the history of the world.
You can challenge that.
I've won awards for that.
But that's no problem. It can't be worse than mine.
Okay. Then yes, you figure it out. On the student grievance procedure, again, the DM complaint committee and not really wanting to see you again. You have the student is encouraged to submit the grievance within 45 days, which is very nice and Montessori of you. But what if they don't do it in 45 days? Is that okay if they do it in 2 years, if they do it in 10 years? It would just behoove you to
be more specific.
Be a little bit more specific. And if you want to say that it generally must be submitted within 45 days, unless something, but you're just leaving yourself open here for somebody to come back at a much later date.
No, I understand.
And then they'll come to us, and we don't have to see you. Under requesting transcripts. Last time you were here, we discussed that your satisfactory academic progress penalty was not usual. And particularly if you're going to DAC, I would suggest that you review the specific DAC requirements, and then also if you're going to be continuing on to get a set of fourth, you might want to encompass all of that and average some of it, encompass them all together and be one and done and just do the policy. You, of course, you turn red when you reference that before you take that part out, but it will make it a lot easier if you're going through the process to not have to change it, not have students already in school, and now you're doing a new policy. And yours is fine for non-accredited, non-subscriber. Except that you do say that satisfactory academic progress is monitored continuously at a specific point in time. That would be hard to do. Anyway, we have more of the semester and quarter stuff. Okay, and then I'm a little bit confused about the student who just stopped coming. You talk about that they can have incompletes, which is great, and incomplete can be replaced with a failing grade if they don't do it. But then you have an inactive status that just sounds like if they disappear, you don't withdraw them, you don't do anything, and it feels just a little bit confusing. What some schools do is they allow, if the student has completed the courses they're in or the term they're in, they can remain in an active status for like a year, say without having to re-enroll, and perhaps that's what your intention is. But it's just kind of strange. It's like I just stop attending, so I go inactive, or am I getting incomplete, and do I have a time frame on it, and are you withdrawing me? It left holes.
Our intention was to allow them the next term to correct an incomplete per class.
And if they need,
so we can make that more clear.
Be clear about the incomplete, and I do think you say on incomplete that they have one term, which is great, but then you have this inactive status. It sounds like instead of getting incomplete, I'll just consider myself inactive by just not saying anything to anybody. I become inactive and I
yeah,
go
no, that's not right. We'll fix that.
You have a really good type of answer. leave of absence. First, it was unclear whether a student in a certificate program could take a leave of absence. And it's okay either way. Just make sure it's clear whether you are allowing or not allowing to. Many schools do not allow a leave of absence during a term because it's hard to come back. So think about if you want to allow it or not allow it, and if you do allow it, make sure you explain how that's done, and know that if you get to the point of tug of war eligibility, it's very, very complicated to give a leave of absence during a term, because they have to come back at the same point the term they left, and that's what they're going to do. And then a lot of schools have a little confusion, I think, on a leave of absence. The leave of absence they're still enrolled, and you're giving them a break, you know, taking a term off or whatever, or, you know, however long you're giving them, but you're asking them to re-enroll. You don't re-enroll. It may be you re-register, which that wording was used somewhere else, but you're strictly saying re-enroll, and they're not actually re-enrolling. And then number eight under this, I think somebody was enjoying writing rules, maybe. Given the diverse disciplinary and interdisciplinary nature of graduate degree programs, programs may develop additional rules governing leave of absence as long as they're consistent with graduate college and university policy. That's like double secret information. You might have more. We're not telling you about them. They're not in writing. We might just drop them on you later. That's very nice. I mean, all the rest of them were typos or use of the word semester, so it wasn't as bad as it was.
Delinquent students, dismissal of delinquent students. I thought that had something to do with payments, but I don't really understand the blurb under there. The university reserves the right to request at any time administrative withdrawal of a student who cannot or does not maintain the required standard of scholarship. Does that mean academic progress?
That
would give you a page. Yeah. Yeah. And then it says it references that what more about delinquent and some other policy that I can't find it.
Yeah, we
we'll clarify that.
Yeah, we'll clarify that.
And if you can't clarify to it, it makes sense to pre-delete it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's an awkward.
Shorter is better. It's very concise.
But delinquent usually misses you. You have to do something else. Delinquent, I think, agree with you, like, as in delinquent, like you were a criminal or a bad person.
Let's choose that word carefully. Any more questions? Questions, comments?
To make a motion to approve the regular vocational program license renewal and the provisional degree granting license renewal with the stipulation to increase the surety bond to $136,245. And make revisions to the catalog and the enrollment.
And submit them for review prior to the license being.
Prior to the license being.
Could you say the last part of that amount, sir?
Yes. $136,245.
$245. Okay, thank you.
Do you accept those stipulations?
Yes.
I second the motion. Any other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
And thank you very much.
Writing and final.
We'll send the tech editing check in the mail. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will you send that to me, Terry, or electronically? Okay. Thank you.
I'm not complaining about my handwriting.
No, ma'am.
Aren't you enjoying your day here? All right. Yeah. Yeah, there's two versions of the company. The regular vocational degree granting license application, call center only, career education preparation. Come forward to you. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Hi, I'm John Klein. I'm the president of American Intercontinental University.
Hello, my name is Daniel Sessions. I'm the director of regulatory operations with Career Education Corporation, assigned to AIU.
I'm Danielle Motika, director of regulatory operations, assigned to work with Colorado Technical University.
Andrew Hirsch, president of Colorado Technical University.
Focusing on our sidebar. Yes. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the board, the applicant is seeking a regular degree granting license and vocational license to operate an administrative center only for admissions, financial aid, and student services for AIU and Colorado Tech. Both institutions are accredited by HLC. Career Education Corporation is the ultimate parent. Other CEC schools in Arizona include the Lee Cordon Bleu, which is in Teach Out. They also did Teach Out and closed Collins College in Sanford Brown in an orderly manner. So they will be at, are you at 875 West Elliott?
No.
No, that's a
touch.
I just realized that.
No, it's on Warner.
It's on Warner.
301 West Warner Road.
My apologies.
Well, then
you guys have to come back.
I guess we're waiting for
you.
That's
you.
Okay.
Well, so that
correct.
Just sounds small. Oh, that's not right.
All right, anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, welcome. Glad you're here. Would you like to make an opening statement regarding your request?
Sure. We're both, Madam Chair and members of the board and staff, we're both excited and thankful for the opportunity to come before you today. As previously mentioned, AIU and CTU are the flagship institutions at Career Education Corporation, which are going to be intended to be our brand as we finalize the teach-out, as mentioned. Both institutions that we're before you here for today are also SARA participating members of this reciprocity agreement. And we're excited to be able to, our endeavor is to be able to be a bit more geographically diverse to be able to serve our geographically diverse student population, to add additional support services here on a West Coast based time zone, and we're excited for part of the year, and both also the rich talent of employees and potential employee candidates here in the local market as well. So we're excited to be here for you and look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Okay. Well, very thorough, very detailed presentation. Thank you.
holy crap.
Yeah. But in the two large institutions, right.
Is it still a lawyer in two?
So the only school that CEC has now in Arizona is La Cordon Bleu. When is that going to be finished with the teach-out?
This should complete its teach-out by the end of September of this year.
All right. And so you'll not be enrolling at this facility for anything in there, but possibly online students that are in Arizona.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And how many staff members and employees do you think you'll have at this location?
We're going to start with a bit of, I mean, I can defer to our two presidents here, but from the current plan is we're to get up to around 150 employees here in this location.
Is this strictly for your online students, or are you going to be possibly streamlining campus operations and moving it to more of a facility?
It will be primarily for our online students. Okay. Both institutions, roughly about what 90% of our students are online. For Colorado Technical University, we have our home campus is Colorado Springs. We have another campus in Denver.
I have a physical location in Atlanta, Georgia, and a physical location in Houston. Our intent is to service online students from this location. There would maybe be a possibility with some financial aid processing or something like that, only because it made sense. But currently it's just to really service online learners across the country. But to get to the western region, we have a lot of students in the west, and we feel like we can service them better from the west.
What percentage of students are in the west?
For AIU, I would say it's like around 10% currently. And, just as the time zones change, sure. It's harder to service them when people in the central region or east coast want to go home. So we'd like to be where our students are.
For CTU, it's about 30-35% sure. For the West.
Okay. All right. I don't have any other questions if anybody else does, since this is not a teaching facility.
The other question I have isn't one that you're actually required to answer. It's a hopeful. Mm-hmm. The school that's in Teach-On, will any of those employees have the opportunity to transfer to
Yes, we've done that throughout the career education system as we've taught out and provided opportunities as the new openings come about that they can apply. The one difference I would say to that is that we're two regionally accredited universities and the Cornell's were not. And so, if it was like a faculty member or something like that, we'd want to make sure that they have to meet all of the requirements that we have as a regionally accredited institution. But they'll have the opportunity.
So in short, they'd be allowed to apply and we'd evaluate. It wouldn't be an internal transfer, if you will.
And from the perspective of the admissions advisors that would be on staff, those positions were vacated from Le Cordon Bleu when the teach-out was announced, so they have not had those particular staff members, but to the extent that we have anyone in student finance or student advising or career services still at the LCB Scottsdale location, they would definitely be. And anyone who was a prior admissions advisor who wishes to come back.
That might, if they know that, that might help them to be willing to stay with you to the end,
right.
Which would help the success of your teacher.
So it's been over a year since the LCB teach-out was announced, so that's when that
LCB does currently support online students from Arizona, and so if it's an academic advisor position or a finance advisor position and they have experience supporting an online student, I think we'd want to have an opportunity to talk to them about helping our students as well.
Okay. Yep. Any questions, board members? Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the regular degree granting license as administrative office only for CEC.
We have a motion. Do we have a
second?
Second. We have a motion. Second. Any comments? Do we need to stipulate or agree or anything? You had to stay through the entire meeting, but all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any of the votes?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, moving right along. The last remaining long awaited additional position program listed application for Archway Training.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Archway Training seeking a non-accredited vocational program license to offer the direct federal social program. The program has been approved by access as required by the state for the client who will get Medicare benefits. Archway Training is affiliated with All Valley Home Health Care and Nursing and providing training to all of the Valley employees. They are now seeking the conditional license. Your board member lead is Mr. Dick.
Good afternoon. Thank you for waiting, ladies. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Betty Owens Camara, and I am the owner and administrator.
I'm Erica Cortez, and I am the training manager for Archway Training.
Okay. So, but I guess, Mr. Director, I'm a little confused that they have had enrollments already.
We don't charge.
Oh, you didn't start. Okay, that's good. Yeah, I was a little confused. All right, well, very good. Can you, like to give an opening statement about what you're planning to propose with this new operation?
Okay, great. If you read the materials, yeah, we're affiliated business because I'm a family owned business. We are a large provider of personal care services. Home attendance, home care, non-medical, and a large percentage of our employees and clients serve all pets, 80% plus, so we have 700 plus employees. So in 2002, Access All Pets made it mandatory that anyone servicing that population was required to take this training. So we initially implemented it as a self-serving enterprise to educate our own labor pool for to fulfill our own employment needs. It was formed as a separate entity, but yeah, we haven't. I think initially we maybe did charge some people a few dollars before we were told not to, but. So we have not been charging the student base, but it's a done on a contractual base with our own company, and we haven't been outside of that realm. So essentially now we're looking to advertise and then charge a small fee for services for potentially people outside of our own employment pool.
Very good. If we go to the section two of your submission. Page 4, can you talk to me about your projections for FY17-18, how you came about to forecasting those, why you think you're going to have a 25% increase? It's pretty steep.
Primarily, well, we've restricted ourselves from advertising. So a lot of that is more aggressive advertising and then potentially contracting for other companies to supply. Because I think, I don't know what the number is, I'm going to just say grossly, there's probably 100 companies, home care companies, that have instituted their own DCW training that's approved through Access.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one other company that I'm aware of that is actually teaching, which is ACE. So a lot of other companies, I do believe there is another company that contracts with service providers to train their labor pool. And so we're potentially looking to do the same thing.
Okay, very good.
As well as some Additionally, there is 6CU, which is pretty robust for the type of training that's provided, but the DCWs are required 6CEU hours per year. So some of this is also that we'll be providing CEU credit hours training as well.
So would they have to create a new program and submit it?
CEUs aren't lessons.
Good for you. To do that. Let's move to Section 8, page 5. Requirements for completion. That third bullet point, attendance must be 90% of class training. Note, if more than 10% of class training is missed, training may arrange a test-out supervised appointment in advance. So, are you saying they must be at a 90% attendance rate to complete the course? I mean, that unless they, if they go more than 10%, they have to?
Yes. Yes, so that was just, like, we do allow people the liberty, and there actually is something that, oh, there it is, on the, so there are quiz sections, right, for the testing, and so they need overall 80% for all of that, so that's line item one. So we do allow some people the liberty to exit the room if they have a personal phone call or...
It's a two-day training, right?
Yes.
It's only 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Well, I don't really know how to roughly that we're like necessarily timing their minutes, but obviously if they've stepped out and they've, you know, gone for, you know, exceeding exceptional amount of time, then... Yeah, then that would be an issue that they probably actually missed a opportunity to take one of the quizzes, so that would require consulting with the trainer for a test out period for them to test out with the
How many quizzes or steps do they take in this process?
Is there 10 quizzes or no, 8?
It's based on the sections of each day. So on the first day, there's a total of 10 chapters we cover. And on the second day, there's 9 chapters. So for each chapter, they've sectioned it off. And this is all the materials that the state has created. So it's more based on that. I think in this event, it's more about in the event that someone was attending the class, which has occurred in the past, that, you know, for some reason, maybe a personal emergency where they've had to leave the class halfway through, you know, we try to make arrangements for them to come back and be able to complete the other portions that they've missed. So I think that's what that's referencing, more of those type of events where, you know, we can't control personal emergencies. And the fact that it is only 2 days, you know, it's really hard to say, well, no, you can't return, you know. But I think it's more that's what they're trying to refer to.
Right, because if they leave, you're not going to refund their money. I saw that. Not even partial refund.
Well, let's explain this. See, your feedback is... we put the no refund to simplify it because I believe it's not a requirement for the number of hours. However, we, as agency, especially of the population that we're serving, have no interest in sort of quibbling somebody squabbling over $100 that they probably don't really have anyway. So, as a matter of practice, I'd probably be more than willing to give somebody their $120 back, $150 back. But as far as the like official policy, yeah, it does qualify for the no refund.
Okay. Any thoughts on that?
I have first year refund policy does say that after the 3 days, even if they haven't started class, you're not going to get a refund.
Yes, that it was my understanding that that we fall under that requirement that no refund is required. So
where I'm coming from, you remember, that's the same thing. So, let's say he and I both, the three of us all started earlier school. And after 3 days, he decides he's going to go. I started and then back out, and then he, you know, leaves taking 2 phone calls and it hits me too much.
you don't have to get a refund, but you decide that you like my flair, so you give me a refund, but you don't give them a refund. So they're going to go to the complaint committee and say, she got a refund, and I didn't get a refund, because we've had this. So it is really good. Your policy's fine, say you're not getting a refund, and we are happy with you helping people and saying, you know, really not entitled to a refund, please go back to what you're getting in. Just keep in mind that it's very subjective, and word of mouth is going to spread, and we're going to chat about that, I got my money back, and I'm going shopping, and they're bummed they have it back. So it's fine to have a policy saying you're not getting a refund because it's so small. It's fine to be human and give things, give money back, but you are going to have grief if you're not consistent in how these decisions are coming.
Okay.
And we don't want to do it in complaint.
Yeah, I don't want to see myself here either. and in all honesty, I think in our original iterations of this, we did have a refund policy because that's kind of my position. It's like, hey, you want your $100 back? Here's your $100 back. So I don't want to spend the time with these sort of grievances either. So
it is fine. Just to get an actual application. You could even put something about extenuating circumstances. Then it gets subjected to the sending email.
Too subjective.
Very true. Then the other thing is, and this is one of those things like, oh, that's really sweet, but do you really mean this? Under requirements for completion, must grow 100% in hands-on skills, which is essentially pass or fail. Note, trainee will provide continued hands-on guidance until trainee successfully performs all skills required or the trainee decides to quit. We have had some students come before the complaint committee that no amount of continued guidance was ever going to get that person to be able to succeed. So you might want to reconsider that wording, you know, continued hands-on. That could be 10 years.
Okay.
Just think about it, because that's going to be interesting.
They have 2 hours.
Yeah, so putting a limit would be good.
I would just take that whole thing.
Just say a reasonable
We do a hands-on training, and it's 2 hours worth that we're all as a group and each individual person, but you know, if they need additional one-on-one type training, they come to us individually, but that's completely separate from that. So to say that continued hands-on, that means that as long as they're an employee, they could come back for training.
That's serving ourselves and these two entities, because if we have somebody employed, we welcome them back at any time to be retrained on
anything. Yeah, we still need to change the wording of that.
Yeah. All right, section 10. The first paragraph under detailed student conduct policy. A little vague on this, the trainer, the last sentence, the trainer will determine if a student will be terminated. Students may apply for readmission to a future class. Maybe you want to give a time frame of when, you know, within 6 months or... And then on page 13, we talked about this earlier, you know, about partial refunds and refunds and all, so that was covered. Section 12, question. And this is the last two I have. Under your other courses you're teaching, got a typo on your pricing on both pages.
Okay.
Effective workplace, you have tuition cost $10, administration registration $30, for a total cost of $30. Do you want to correct that to be $40, or is it zero and $30?
Well, actually, we haven't been providing this, so we haven't been charging, and then if that's something that I was originally not clear on is like, do I have to include everything or just the DCW? So, it is, yeah.
And then the same thing on the meditation one?
Yeah.
Same error. And just want to make sure you're teaching meditation, you're not teaching teachers, so you're not getting in trouble with the That's all I have.
I just have two. And the grievance,
Yes.
And I neglected to write down myself what page number it was, so I have to get up. It says, it doesn't specify on for the director, is it business days or calendar days, holidays excluded? You say the director has so many days, so just give yourself a little bit of a break there, just in case, you know, what if they get it on a Friday and you're closed for 4 days?
Yeah,
vacation.
I see 5 days. Do you happen
it just says days.
Thanksgiving
and
yes.
You know, because
okay.
Whatever you say there, they're going to come and complain about it. We don't want it.
You might want to consider is when you specify a specific title and that person is on vacation for a longer period of time, it is typical to do so and so or the
week.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
And yes, we've had some clinics on doing that particular
person.
And then this is probably just a typo, checko on the background information. On number 7, you say, is the licensed applicant current on its payments to federal, state, to tax liabilities, and workers' compensation insurance? And we said, no, you're not current.
Oh, where's that?
Is your application the first part of this?
I have an email.
He said checklist, then you check no, the last one's supposed to be.
Are you current in your payment of federal, state, and tax liability?
Oh, yes. Yes,
we are.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments?
I'll make a motion to approve the conditional vocational program license application with the stipulation that a $15,000 surety bond be maintained. Are you in agreement with that?
Yes.
And motion made a second. Any comments? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Thank you.
Good luck. Lots of meditation. Don't mess with Donna.
You know, I'm
not going
to. She looks nice, but
she can't. All right. Ready for public comment? All right. Call public. Any of you public people, would you like to make any comments? All right. We'll move on to board business. An update on the AZ Star Council.
Madam Chair, members of the board, just so you know, I invited Ms. Duick to provide you an update with the Arizona Star Council, the activities that have gone, we have participated in, what, not 2 years? Well, 2 years, the council has been active almost three years.
Three in April.
As you know, we have three designated representatives from the board that serve on the council. Right now, unfortunately, I was the only one yesterday. Tuesday, I think it was. Mr. Pastillo was on, and he lost his appointment. He could no longer serve, and then Dr. Latta obviously has resigned, so Lena is anxiously awaiting our two new appointments for the Star Council, but there's been a lot that's gone on, plus the federal rec, so I thought it best that the expert could tell us.
Thank you for coming. Can you introduce yourself, please? Yeah. My name is Lana Duick. I'm the Executive Director for the Arizona Star Council. Madam Chair, thank you for having me here today, board members, and Ms. Stample, thank you for inviting me. SARA exists because there's a belief in the federal triad, or the triad for higher education, that is the federal government, accreditation agencies, and the states. And so I sit here today, and the Arizona SARA Council sits here on the shoulders of your work. And so I wanted to take this moment to thank you all for the work that you do, for the work that I've evidenced today, because we would not exist without what all of you guys do. So with that being said, thank you very much for allowing me to be here. Thank you on behalf of the Arizona State Council for your work. And Ms. Stanfield asked me to provide a couple updates. The first one is on probably one of our favorites, the federal regulations. And so I'll just pass these out. The regulation is 103 pages long. So my page and three-quarter summary is very much a summary. And I would like to say openly that it is a summary that what I like to do when I summarize is to take as many words from the regulation itself or from the Department of Education's own explanatory notes. So that is what you see here. That way there's no confusion. However, there are some elements which I will highlight that are strictly my opinion. The department gave us a lovely gift in December, a Christmas present, as I like to call it, of the new regulation entitled State Authorization of Post-Secondary Distance Education in Foreign Locations. A little bit of the context, which I'm sure everyone here is very well aware of, but it kind of gives us an idea as to why they're doing this. In 2006, Congress abolished the regulation that aid was not to be distributed to distance education. And so with that, there are lots of steps out there, but the one that I chose to highlight was we currently have 5.5 million students participating in distance education at degree-granting institutions and 3 million in exclusively online students. So the department is looking at a lot of students, a lot of federal aid, and a lot of consumer protection. In this regulation, the department is focusing on two areas, really two areas that the Higher Education Act does not do a good job of regulating, and so they're clarifying that in this regulation. The first is state oversight of distance education, and the second is state and federal oversight of foreign locations. I won't read all of the 4 points as to exactly how the department has decided to go about doing this, but I'll just highlight the four. The first is really the authorization of distance education across state borders. The second is consumer complaints and documenting that for students. The third is disclosures, and the fourth is foreign locations. And what I said to the council on Tuesday when we met is that for institutions, if I was looking at this, it's really the third bullet. They're all very, very important, but the third bullet, the one requiring the disclosures, is the one that's going to be really significant for institutions to be able to operationalize. So what is the future of this regulation? As we all know, we have a new administration in D.C. And so many people who are in the know and who have written about this regulation, the belief is that perhaps the Trump administration is going to kill this under the Congressional Review Act. WCET has put out a very concise but informatory blog update on the Congressional Review Act, if anyone is interested in that. However, they were able to secure, through the work of WCET and SARA, that the regulation is intended to support reciprocity. So for purposes of SARA, that was a very important clarification. As the regulation read, originally it almost seemed as though they were not going to be supportive of reciprocity, which would put us in a very difficult situation. So what is the impact on institutions and states? As we all know, the initial attempt to pass regulation on distance education came out in October of 2010, and that was vacated, and yet you all still sit here today, and I sit here today representing SARA. So we know that state authorization is still moving forward. So that is what I advise all states and all institutions, that regardless of what the feds do, state authorization requirements have existed for a very long time and will continue to exist, and that's what we need to pay attention to. Any questions on the regulation?
I am so impressed you digested 103 pages of the Ministry's work, so I commend you.
Thank you. I can't say that I've read all 103 pages, but this is at least an attempt at a summary.
Is there an issue that NC Sierra could be expanded then?
Is there an
is it possible that NC Sierra would be disbanded because of this?
What the regulation, the way what it stated was that that the federal government would acknowledge reciprocity. However, that if there was a conflict in state regulation, that the state regulation and reciprocity would need to come into agreement. However, in reading that originally, what it read was that the state regulation would supersede reciprocity, in which case there's no need for reciprocity, because if you have state regulation that's already going to supersede reciprocity, then there's no point in joining. So what the Undersecretary did was provide a verbal first, but then a written clarification that that's not what they intended in the language. What they intended with the language was to say that there, if there is a conflict between the reciprocity policy and the existing state regulation, then the state and SARA would need to work together to resolve that conflict. So either the state would need to change the regulation or SARA policy would need to be updated.
So on here you say that the regulation may be killed by the Trump. So do you guys have any
have
you guys heard anything from the future? I haven't heard anything about education at all.
Well, he has placed a hold on the implementation. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Reese Priebus, Chief of Staff, sent memo to all the high-ups in the departments that existing regs that have not yet been implemented are on hold until...
We are subject to congressional review, and that's what we're going to do. So, review them all.
That doesn't hit gainful employment. But it does not. It hits the last couple of ones.
It could hit this one. It could hit the Title II.
Spiral is to defense and the...
So while there's nothing that's been published or nothing that's come out from the Hill, when I ask colleagues who are in the know, the general belief is that it may be killed.
So, separate question, how many states are participating with SARA now?
47 states plus the District of Columbia.
Wow. That just goes weeks and not a long time.
It does. That brings me to my next update, which is a SARA update and then an AZ SARA update. So NC SARA has 47 states and the District of Columbia.
Hold on.
We have three remaining, California, Massachusetts, and Florida.
What is
that? For our neighbor, California, for a lot of institutions who were operating without a physical presence, only online, there is no need to seek authorization. However, California has recently changed its regulation, so those institutions who were operating only online will need to seek authorization in California. So California is very important not only for us geographically in the region, but also because they've changed their regulations. And we see that consistently, although California hasn't joined yet, we're seeing a lot of states, as they join SARA, they're actually going and changing their state regulations to align with SARA, or they're making them significantly more robust than what they were. They've never said this, but the speculation is that that's in anticipation or hope that institutions will seek reciprocity through SARA as opposed to the traditional form of gaining authorization in their state. That's the trend that we're seeing that was very much unanticipated when SARA rolled out. As far as just general stats on who are the SARA participating institutions, we have currently 1,315 institutions in those 47 states and DC. And this is a really interesting stat. When SARA was just a concept and being debated, one of the fears was that this regulation would really open, or this regulation, this reciprocity agreement would open the doors for the for-profit. And there were many who advocated that reciprocity was a very good endeavor if only we could do it for the public. But SARA stood very strong and said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it for everyone with fair criteria. And so with that context, 73% of participating institutions come from the public arena. 24 from the private nonprofit and 3 from the private for-profit. So it's interesting to see that the general fear that this would be the doors opening for the for-profit has not come to fruition. That really the institutions that are, I don't know if gaining the most is the best word, but who are really taking advantage of reciprocity through SARA are the public institutions. It can be debated as to why, but there is a financial criteria for SARA in the composite score, and it's speculated that perhaps some of the for-profits don't meet that criteria. It's also because a lot of them are smaller, and they simply may not have the funds, or they just don't have the need to seek national reciprocity. They're looking at more regional. For Arizona SARA, we are, as Ms. Stanfield stated, we are closing out or near closing out our second year, going into our third year of existing as a council, although we had been in operation for almost 2 years before that, just to get us to that point. We are a 9-member council, 3 members from each sector, 3 coming from this board, 3 from the community college sector, and 3 from the Arizona Board of Regents, 1 from the U of A, ASU, and NAU. We currently have 24 Arizona institutions. There are many more institutions in Arizona than just 24, but 24 that have really felt the need to seek authorization within SARA. And what I'm really pleased to announce is that at our September council meeting, the council voted to decrease our fees across the board by 30%. As you know, in Arizona, we did not have a board that we could put the council in conjunction with, so the council operates as its own entity, and so we had to have a fee structure that would support that. Not knowing how many institutions would become participating institutions, we set a fee structure at $5,000 being our lowest and $30,000 being our highest. And that fee structure has served us well to get us going and to get the operational costs covered, but we had met our reserve amount and decided to reduce the fees. So now they sit at $3,500, $7,000, $14,000, and $21,000. Additionally, the council noted that we had a surplus to our reserve and made the recommendation to give that back as a one-time discount to all the institutions that had applied during the first year. And I think 2 more updates on the council. One, we're very pleased. When we decided to do the council, we knew we were going to be doing something different in the state of Arizona, that we had the opportunity to form something that really added value to our institution. And thus far, in the first 2 years of operation, we've been just figuring out what it means to be a council. But we're ready to take the next step in seeing how we can give back to our institutions. So we just voted at our meeting on Tuesday to do our first one-day forum for participating institutions. We will be bringing in experts from across the nation to give regulatory updates across the board on higher education, but also focus on state authorization. And finally, we've been working with our legal representatives from across the sectors on updating our intergovernmental agreement, and that is going through the final legal review right now, and then we will submit it out for signatures. That concludes my update. If there are any questions, I'm happy to address them.
That's all
pretty
impressive.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Thank you for coming and hanging out through our very long meeting.
I actually enjoyed it. I get to learn a lot.
Executive Director's Report, Ms. Dando.
I provided to you in the report the programs that have been approved by staff, and the processing of the 65 January renewals and the approved change of location and change of name for Mayo. Again, listed the schools that are in teach out and the schools that closed during this last cycle. St. Xavier, as you will recall, they were in Gilbert, and basically they closed because they lost funding from Illinois.
Yeah.
The AZICS schools provided you a list of what has been communicated to us, that who they are seeking new accreditation with. The latest was as of the new additional actions taken was that HLC placed his own Christian on notice. And and ACCSC placed RSI on the warning and gave you the explanation. Also, you may have all heard, I think as of Tuesday, HLC approved the change of ownership for UC. And it is expected to the merger to take place, which you have already considered and approved pending the department, which has an enormous amount of restrictions. Basically, HLC mirrored it. They had to post a very large, it was a combination of letter credit and cash or something like that. They agreed to do to the tune of 25% more than the usual bill payment. So once that merger takes place, I'll go ahead and issue the approval of the change of ownership. Any questions on that?
I saw in the, I think it was in the Fisherman's Journal, the city of Gilbert built in Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that 37 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just settled and they're getting 6 or 9 million from the same Xavier. That's seven.
One of the reasons why we came to the focus
Was that the one that when Gilbert was in the hole, the mayor mm-hmm. and everybody?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're also the ones that we plan to legislature on our slow processing of the new roads.
That's why they closed.
Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to. All right. Legislative update. There is to date, there has not been any legislation that I am aware of that discusses the consolidation. There is one bill that will transfer the Arizona Radiation Regulatory Authority to DHS. The report on the health boards was required to be published November 1st. It has not, as of yet, been released. My guess is the report that was done for our board and for technical registration had a litany of errors in it, which I shared with the Department of Administration. And I don't know if that probably put a halt, you know, set back that we need to probably think about how we do this if we're going to do it. So that's good news. Frankie just told me, I guess it's been a surprise, Keith had a call from Representative Kelly Townsend, who offers a doula program. You were, yeah, I'm sure you guys know that too. We're learning about who we're in. Well, that required licensure. That's quite acceptable. As a result, a bill has been introduced that is now an addition to our it's Senate Bill 1293 that will add to the exemptions. Be number 12, a private instructional program or course that is less than 24 hours in length and that charges a fee of less than $1,000.
So you're saying to have a dual course, you have to
attend? It may exempt. For instance, also the DCW programs that were just before you would be exempt.
Okay.
So those two ladies that were just up here.
Right.
That would be exempt because
that put Ms. Townsend out of business because of
the money. So they're
going to be
So definitely I would suggest that we don't pose. We don't want to go down the road that we went last year.
No, I actually agree with that.
Let me throw something out. Would you want to increase the hours to be more? I mean, so let's say if a program is
24 hours, it kind of puts it 3 days.
3 days.
3 8-hour
days.
I mean,
if you wanted, like, a program that's 40 hours.
I would be more concerned about the dollar.
$1,000
is a lot
for nobody to
be
watching.
Yeah. Well, I'd say $1,000 is a lot of money for some people.
40 hours or whatever hours.
24 hours and
$1,000.
So it's
got to
be both.
So one of those can trip.
24 contact hours and less than $1,000.
They have to be both. It will have to be both. I can tell you we would be very well liked, for lack of a better word, if we suggested a higher hour.
I know a lot of the people
less
come in with
graduation.
A lot of these people that come in with these little programs that are more than a seminar, right? So they're more than 8 hours, but they're not very much. They go through all of this trouble, and we spend so much time liking them, and then they come back after a year, they don't have anybody yet, and then they don't,
well, that's,
and then they're gone.
That's why it's probably not horrible. I mean,
that school's doing pretty good.
Yeah, they're doing
all right.
Of all, down to 40 hours. We had that exemption, but it was in. It wasn't under. It didn't read correctly, so it didn't matter if it was under that. If it was a vote program, we said you still had to be licensed. It read wrong, and so we got rid of it and.
What other states do?
Like,
what is the norm?
Actually, I don't know.
Do you know?
I don't think we have such a thing as a norm when it comes to that in
the states. It probably is all of the
some states
board.
Have boards, some don't.
So limiting to 1,000 is good because that's a lot of money for many people. And because we require a refund policy, and so if they are not licensed by us, they can just take the $1,000 and be gone. So a lot of people could really get ripped off.
So who would, I mean, anyone watch that then? Is it, no one would be watching them at all, or what happened?
It had to be incorporated,
sure. Yeah, no one would, basically, no one.
They can still go to consumer
they
affairs.
They can go
there. Yeah, and they can go that route. And they'll have,
based on what you want, you know, compose it, support it, say increase it, I will tell you it will look very favorable in the governor's office. Not that that should sway your opinion.
Well, I'm definitely not in favor of doing more than $1,000.
Oh, no.
The question is, it's 24 contact hours, that's 24. Essentially like 3 days.
Yeah, you
go to 40
contact
like
hours and 100,000.
40 would be in. I mean, I go to conferences that are, you know, 4.5 days. So yeah, I would think that's
continuing.
We used to essentially have it, so ignore anything less than 40.
No, that's an argument. How well a paying job are you going to get with 40 hours training?
Yes, if you do 40 hours or less, if you're going to call them, make sure they specify that contact hours.
Okay.
And not just 8 day.
24
hours.
Yeah.
I was like, 48 hours. There's 3.
So, Peterson.
40 hours or less and 1,000 or less, or is it less than 1,000?
1,000 or less.
It would be Fee of less than $1,000.
So 1,000 hours, that's 40 or less. That's 40 or
less than 40 hours.
Less than 40 hours.
But everybody wants
40.
I would say
40. 40 is a week.
I think doing 39 less than 40 is 39.
Right, so 40 or less. Instead of less than 40, we get 40.
40 or less.
Yeah, I think 40 would take them, it's still regulatable at a week.
Yeah.
So 40 or less
would be something.
What's that?
You're going to have a funny look on your face.
Well, these are the ones we get, like the, you know, where they do them for 39 hours and they charge $995 and, you know, we promise the world and it becomes an issue.
Yeah, but I just think you got to have some cut off.
No, I agree.
They're just getting too much minutia. What's the cost of the people trying to do it? It's kind of restricted.
And how much stuff, you know, to do the whole catalog for a two-day thing like that?
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
I know what Pete's thinking, and I agree with him from the complaint side of the house.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to see projecting 1,000 students in a year. That's a lot of students.
There is, now I can't remember, I haven't done it.
ACE ran about 1,000 groups, so that, I mean, it's such a quick course. It's,
yeah.
There is. Also, HG 2270, that, well, it's in Title 15, which is education, but it does state that, and I think it's a result of the ICT closure when many of the credits transferred, that for the vets, that they're making you evaluate your time to accept it.
That's been for a while.
Hmm?
Hasn't that been for a while?
Brand new.
Because the vets, I mean, you get in trouble with the VA if you don't evaluate every last thing that the vets did. Even if they ask you, even if they don't ask you.
I don't know, just, I'm pretty sure this is because of the VA. The other one's 1072, which I think this is something. Does this not just tell them they do a complete new trial?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So,
I thought so.
Yeah.
This is a bill.
We would have to go to a hearing for our hearing.
Yeah, 1072, which it's a bill that once it, let's say you deny, and he appeals, and it goes to.
So your hearing, you're able to hear it in front of the board, or you can refer it to OA. They get a 35-day appeal window. If you do it in front of the board, the appeal once again comes back to the board. If you do it in front of OA, the appeal goes back to OA. They can only appeal the original case for, I think there's like 8 specific reasons. Board bias, evidence that couldn't have been discovered at the time the trial took place. There's specific criteria. If the appeal is denied, they get to do a JRA. And that's in Superior Court. This bill is saying that in Superior Court, the judge can reopen the entire case, rehear all the evidence, and become the trier of fact, which has never been done because we've always had a Chevron standard, which is deference to the board.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to eliminate the deference standard.
Is this that dental board thing in North Carolina?
No, this is the people from like Goldwater and Institute for Justice that believe that the deference standard is harming the licensees, basically, because the deference standard is so high. To overcome that, it has to be arbitrary and capricious. And to prove that the board made an arbitrary or capricious decision, or that the OA judge did, really high standard.
Yeah.
So they're trying to eliminate that standard and have basically a Superior Court judge retry the case as a bench trial, which is nutty because then what is the point of having the board hear the case or having an ALJ hear the case in the first place? We should just send everything straight to the judge, you know, especially if it's a different standard. So it's a little strange. But I guess we'll see what happens.
Who's the sponsor?
It is
Senator Peterson.
Yeah.
Burgess, Fan, Farnsworth, Smith, Worsley, Representative Farnsworth, Benton, Grantham, and Kermit.
Nominate Ms. Leonard again for chair. Second. Okay. Well, okay. Can you do it? I find you. This is why I say all those things. Sure. You just abstain. I abstain. Okay. Mr. Chair. Aye. 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 Aye
Vice Chairman.
Second that. Moved or seconded it.
Okay, so you make the motion to accept them as Vice Chair, and you second it? Okay, all those votes that?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Welcome, Vice Chair. Oh, that's a little weird.
Welcome back,
Before we get this meeting, let's just start with real quick.
Missing meetings.
You're not going to miss any?
Oh, you can't miss
it.
Well,
one time, that's what you said.
Yeah. Actually, I called him back in the morning, and I want points for that. So we have the complaint, the finance representative for the Daisy Star Board, one or two?
Two.
And representative of the Board of the Arizona Commission for Secondary, how many is that?
One.
So when we now ask for volunteers for complaint and finance, we would like for three?
Nice for three.
Okay. So the complaint committee, three people volunteer for the complaint committee.
I'll stay on for a while, I guess.
Stay on?
I don't know what Sarah is.
Okay, if I could make my own personal interjection here. We're hurt on finance. Dr. Mittman's the sole member left with the loss of Jason and Casey. But there's different times.
Okay, so let's do finance first, as we show cover family is the complaint committee is, believe it or not, actually easier. So finance, Dr. Mim, are you re-volunteering?
Sure.
Okay. And Jim, are you volunteering?
I'm not an accountant, but
you have the school perspective.
Okay.
And then Craig, you're volunteering?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's three, and then do we need an alternate?
We have three.
Have you already set the dates for those meetings?
Yeah.
I just need a copy of the dates. Get one on the calendar.
So if we have three, we don't need an alternate?
No, not because if one of them doesn't show, we can still be able to do it. There's not a serious amount of action taking. I mean, they can, but.
So do we need to make a motion to let those three?
You appoint.
All right. I appoint you. Sarah.
You did the complaint.
Well, we'll go back to the complaint. We're going to make sure we fill everything else in the last minute, because the complaint, actually any of us can do the complaint because it doesn't require specific other knowledge, so I thought maybe we should go back together. So Sarah, we want two.
Two more, because Terry's still there.
Terry does, we need two more.
How often does Sarah
come on? Every other
member,
or every
third
member?
Dr. Mittman and Jennifer.
Yeah,
every
3 months.
Okay, so you two?
I'm there.
Why do we have one in March and one in May?
Because in our original schedule, we have to align with Sarah's approval. So
I thought that the other day.
What other clarity do you mean?
Our next one is March
21st.
After that is May
23rd. You need to connect with
the attorney
now.
If she gets approved, I will send you the
March 21st, May
23rd. And I don't have the exact dates memorized for September and January, but at the end of both September and January.
Okay. So you're good with not being on two things? Okay. You're good with being on two things?
Yes, ma'am, you have to.
And then,
people here.
I know. The only reason is when you agree to be on a board, don't we do too? Yeah, we don't take it until later.
So later, right. And then, the Arizona Commission for Post-Secondary Education College Savings Program Oversight Committee. That's one person.
How often does that
mean? That I couldn't tell you.
I'm familiar with the commission. I served for 5 years, so I'm glad to do that.
So moved. I already knew that, so, you know, I was like, well, come on.
Okay, so then on the complaint committee, you have volunteered. And you have volunteered.
Yes.
So and
you have volunteered.
So I suppose I have to volunteer if I'm not on one of the others.
You're really good at it.
I'm
going to
go,
but
you
won't
leave the room.
I have to say, well, I don't want to see you at the complaint committee anymore if you're not on the committee.
Yeah,
I can't say that.
That is one of my fondest statements. By the end of the meeting, do you all feel like you don't want to see me? That's what I'm going to
say. I was waiting
for
somebody to say, are you threatening me?
I think that has happened.
Not with bodily harm at this point, but yes, I am threatening you.
I will just stop it all with the look.
I thought for the record, our last city has never had a complaint on Sarah Lee
and stuff.
Yeah, you really don't come close to the complaint committee. You think this is outstanding? You'd be at one of those
meetings. Oh, boy.
It is not pretty. We've actually at some of the meetings had people just say, yes, I'm sure. Yes,
I'm sure. I've had a lot of challenges.
Yes, he has. Okay, but we have three on complaints.
I need an all-time complaint.
You need an all-time complaint. Okay. Do you volunteer to be an all-time complaint?
I alternate. Does that mean I have to go, or does that mean I just go with
somebody? No, I'll go with somebody
else. No, somebody knows they're going to be out.
You might want to go to the first couple of us.
I've been there. And they are not
pleasant if you say...
I've done it three times. This is my third time. I mean, this will be my third term, but... So.
Are you planning to meet legislators?
I'll have to. I'm guessing. This is my... I just finished my second term.
The Senate Education Committee meets on Thursday. I think it's like at 9. And so the agenda for next week will get posted... Last week, it got posted really late Friday.
I hope it's not next week, because I am not here, and it's not moving.
Well, have they called you? No.
Is that what they do? Do they call you or email you? Or
no,
what?
They'll call you to say, we're scheduling you.
Okay. Like a phone call.
Well, that was the old one. I don't know how they do it anyway.
But they let you know, too, right?
No, they do not.
No.
Oh, yes, so you'll find out if you actually let her know.
I just know because I searched the ARS website.
Well, would they do all the boards on one day? Or
no,
like,
no. See, and this is just before the Senate Education. So,
right.
No, they haven't had any executive nominations yet. They'll do all of you guys, probably at the same time.
One day?
I would assume.
Okay, I'll let you know if I find out.
Yeah.
And then you can let everybody else know. All of us do the same.
Yeah.
So they do. I've never done it with anybody else before.
They can.
It's been just me.
It depends on the chair.
Last time we went and met, it was a phone call. I didn't go in person. I called my appointment, and they said they were speaking on the phone. And they asked me a lot of questions on the phone. Then the person who asked me the most questions on the phone didn't even show up to the hearing.
I had to physically go meet Senator Yee. Remember, I had to go to her office and sit there with
her. She is not vice chair this year.
I know.
She's a member, but she's not vice
She didn't even pay attention to me. There was two votes going on, so I was just kind of sitting there watching.
Yeah,
I
can't be the chair.
Yeah.
I can't remember who's vice chair.
I think a Common Core.
Not my deal.
Well, it's not my deal. Oh, aren't you going to
Yes, we are adjourned. Oh, we are adjourned.